All right, everyone, welcome to week two of the boot camp. Apologies for the technical problems. The last call we had that was on this line ran late, and we had several dozen people on that, and we just had to wrap it up, so we had a little problem. I apologize for that. You will not be shortchanged. You can consider that maybe a little bit of a bonus, a glimpse into another world. So we've got a little bonus, like Stephanie mentioned, that this week we want to announce. And the bonus is that we have another raffle for you. So we had about half of the participants in this group who all entered the raffle. And congratulations, you've got your hotel room booked, you've got your airfare booked, and you have entered the raffle that we will have a drawing at the extra bonus workshop. Remember, that extra bonus workshop is absolutely 100% not required in order to get total value from this four-week telephone-only boot camp. You absolutely do not have to come to the bonus workshop to get all the value we promised out of this four-week telephone boot camp. The live two-day workshop, which takes place in Orlando, is 100% just a bonus. It's extra. So if you can't make it for whatever reason, don't feel like you're missing out. Well, I guess you're missing out on the bonus, but don't feel like you're not getting all the value that you need to get out of this four-week telephone-based boot camp, because you will get complete value out of the telephone-based boot camp. That's just a bonus. So about half of you are already registered. Congratulations. Good for you. You'll enter. There will be a raffle to see who gets the airfare and hotel paid for you, reimbursed for you. If you're feeling really, really, really lucky, I guess you'll, charter a helicopter from the airport and fly the Concorde. That flying Concorde doesn't fly anymore, but you'll be in that raffle. But this week we have a second raffle this week, because I want to get everyone to this live event, because this bonus is really, really great, and it's really going to help you a lot. If you submit your confirmation to attend the event, which takes place on July 19th and July 20th, the bonus, if you submit that, your airfare and your hotel booked by the end of this week, in other words, before next week's call, you will be entered in a second raffle, and the second raffle prize is going to be a free one-hour private one-on-one laser coaching session with me. You can bring me any challenge, problem, issue you've got going on in your law firm, and you will have my one-hour complete focus, undivided attention for that. To put this in perspective, when I do a shared VIP day, four law firms will typically get together and they will book 2 days with me. Four firms share 2 days. The fee for those 2 days is $32,000. I have a waiting list of shared VIP day people who want to do a shared VIP day with me, because I deliver tons of value, because I really give you my undivided attention, and I really know what I'm talking about here when it comes to pretty much anything to do with running a law firm. And each firm only gets half a day. So half a day for roughly $8,000, or you get 1 hour of my undivided attention for free just for winning the raffle. Now, what if you entered the raffle last week and you would prefer the prize for the raffle being offered this week? Good news, you will get first dibs. So basically the way this will work is we will draw the first winner from everyone who entered the raffle last week, and you will get to choose between the two prizes. Do you want to have us cover your hotel and your airfare, or do you want to have 1 hour of undivided attention from me? In the past, when we do this, it's obvious people usually choose the 1 hour laser coaching with me, and then whoever wins the second week raffle is left with the leftovers, which is still pretty good because you get your airfare and your hotel covered. That's good. So anyway, that is week two raffle. So even if you missed out on the first week, you still have a chance to win. Everyone should have done the homework. And this week is mostly going to be interactive Q&A. So get ready, because we're going to be having a lot of interaction. I'm going to be working with each of you individually, or at least most of you individually, if you press *6 to raise your hand. Keep in mind, *6 to raise your hand is how you raise your hand to get a spot in the Q&A to get interactive time with me. So if you already know you have a question, you can go ahead, press *6 right now and get online. If I end up answering your question before it's your turn, you can just say, you already answered my question, and you move on to the next one. But at least grab your spot. Don't you dare get off this call today and say, I had a question that I didn't get an answer to it, because I'm telling you right now, no one has their hand up. Anyone who goes to press *6 on their phone right now will be first on the line, and you will definitely get your question answered. So let's get to it. Magic statement. Let's see where to begin here. Give me a second. So let's get to it. Let's just go through and work on your magic statements. And before we get to that, I just want to give you a quick lesson. The whole point of this is so that when you're out networking, when you're doing a speech, when you're interviewing someone to hire as an employee of your firm, when you're meeting with a prospective new client, when you are training people on your team to be able to meet with prospective new clients, in all of the brand, everything you're doing to market your firm and to grow your firm is going to be based on this magic statement. And the magic statement is the answer to the question, what do you do? Now, when you're out at a networking event and someone asks, what do you do? You've got to know that they're not really asking, what do you do? What they're really asking is, what can you do for me? And so when you're giving them an answer, rather than saying, you know, I'm a lawyer, I'm a bankruptcy lawyer, I'm an immigration lawyer, I mean, you like put me to sleep with this stuff. Speak to the benefits of what your firm can do for them. What you want to do is you want to give them a handle that they can use to grab on to what you do and understand it. Because they didn't go to law school, or even if they went to law school, they didn't go and they didn't decide to focus in on your particular area of the law. And they don't understand everything that you do. They don't want to understand everything that you do. They don't need to understand everything that you do. They don't need to know. They don't want to know how the sausages get made. They just want to understand the benefits of what you do so they can have something to remember days, weeks, months later when the time comes that they're in a situation where they need someone who does what you do, either for themselves or for someone that they want to look good to by making a referral. So that magic statement is a handle so that you're in a situation where someone will say, what do you do? And I might say, depending on the situation that I'm in, I have different magic statements that I use. So depending on the situation that I'm in, my surroundings, be aware of your surroundings, I might say, I help lawyers start and build successful law firms in record time. Oh, wow, that's interesting. You help lawyers start and build successful law firms in record time. Now, if they're even remotely interested in that, they will ask, gee, tell me more. How do you do that? And then I'll have an opportunity to get into how I do it and why I do it and what the business does and blah, 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 because they gave me permission to do so. If they're not interested in that, they won't ask any more information, and I can move on to talk to the next person at the networking event or at the cocktail party or whatever. It's not like I can take someone who's not interested in starting a successful law firm in record time and talk them into being interested by inundating them with fact after fact, detail after detail, and blah, blah. I'm not going to talk them into wanting it. In a different situation, if I understand the surroundings that I'm in, for example, if I'm at a CLE event with experienced attorneys who have their own law firms, I won't say I help lawyers start and build successful start successful law firms in record time because they already have their own law firm. I'll say I help owners of small law firms take their firms from $250,000 to $500,000 in 18 months, and I do that all the time. Wow. What do you do, Arjun? Well, I help owners of small law firms take their law firms from $250,000 to about $500,000 in about 18 months. That's what me and my team do all the time. Oh, wow. If their revenues are over $1 million, they might not be very interested in that. And they might say, oh, that's interesting, and then, you know, pass the mustard because they already have a $1 million law firm. But if their revenues are under $250,000, it's not like they're going to say, you know, my revenues are only $200,000, and you said you help people take their law firms from $250,000 to $500,000. So clearly this is not applicable or relevant to me, so please pass the mustard. That doesn't happen. It doesn't have to be so precise. It just needs to be relevant and intriguing so that the right person perks up and asks you to please tell them more. And then that vision, that concept, that big idea, the handle, if you will, stays with them so that days, weeks, months later, when the lawyer is sitting there or when the accountant is sitting there or when the roofing contractor is sitting there or when the husband or the wife or the friend or the child is sitting there and they talk to a lawyer who's complaining and saying, oh, geez, I wish I could grow my law firm. You know, it's only doing $197,000. It's only doing $274,000. It's only doing $318,000. I wish I could grow it. They will then be able to say, you know what? I met someone whose business takes law firms from $250,000 to $500,000 in about 18 months. Is that someone you'd like to be introduced to? And you can bet that if the lawyer who is saying my law firm is only doing this or only doing that, they're going to say, yes, I want to know more about this. And then the person who I met will be in a great position to use the handle that I gave them to hand me over to this person and make a really good referral that will make me look good and will make them look good. The reason why we say magic statement, and some people refer to this as laser talk, and some people refer to this as their elevator pitch, and there's all kinds of books that were written in the late 90s and in the mid and late 1990s, it seems like, when everyone was talking about laser coaching and elevator talk and all that kind of stuff, elevator speech and all that kind of stuff. I say magic statement. And the reason I say magic statement is because years ago I was doing a CLE speech when I was with the Florida Bar's Law Office Management Assistance Service. And I was out doing a speech, a CLE speech for one of the sections that asked us to do a speech on law firm marketing for them, for their members. And someone was talking about this, and I just kind of came up with an analogy because it was the only way I could get this concept across. And I said, look, imagine a prospective client responds to your marketing. So you do all this brilliant marketing, and they call your office, and your office does a phenomenal job on intake. And because they did such a great job of intake, the prospective client has scheduled an appointment. And then you did an even better job, and you had a marketing system that followed up with an email confirmation and sent another email with directions to the office and a picture of what the building looks like from the outside. So it wouldn't be scary, and it wouldn't be intimidating, and it wouldn't be confusing, so that the person comes in with a clear mind instead of a confused mind. And you did an even better job with your intake procedure, and you created a glide path, an intake process, where we ask the person ahead of time before you come in for the appointment, here's some things we'd like you to think about. Here's some things we'd like you to ponder. We'd like you to make some decisions about would you like left-handed or right-handed or ketchup or mustard or whatever we need them to start thinking about to get in the right frame of mind. And here's some frequently asked questions that you might want to know before you get to the appointment so you're not losing sleep so you can feel better. And by the way, here's some frequently asked questions that might help you make the decision that we might not be the right firm for you. And if we're not the right firm for you, no harm, no foul. Please just contact the office, politely cancel the appointment, or even ask us, and we'd be happy to make a referral to another firm that might be a better fit for you. Just let us know. We're happy to help either way. And you did this whole thing, and the prospective new client has now responded to your marketing, responded to your intake procedure, schedules an appointment, takes all your client intake, the intake glide path, so to speak, what I just described, which, by the way, you should all now be writing down, I need to have an intake script. I need to have an intake script. If you don't have an intake script, you need an intake script. You should all be writing down, that's what an intake glide path looks like. That's what it looks like when you have a million-dollar, multi-million-dollar law firm that has a streamlined, systematic intake process. I just showed you, I just described what that looks like. Not everything has to be so didactic. I don't have to always say, step one, do this. Step two, do that. It gets a little bit boring. So sometimes I'd like to describe it in a story to give you the experience of what it feels like, and that's how I teach sometimes. All right, so I described to you the intake script. The intake script works. The person has signed up, has scheduled an appointment. The glide path process has worked with the email confirmation and the picture of the office and the picture and the video of you welcoming and talking about your philosophies and your values and what you stand for and what the firm is and what the firm isn't and who it's for and who it's not for. And the right people say, oh, my God, this is great because that sounds like it's right for me. And the wrong people say, maybe I shouldn't do this because it doesn't sound like the right firm for me. And then you can refer them to someone else. And then they come in with the right frame of mind because you gave them some homework to start thinking about, as opposed to the intake sheets that most people ask their clients to waste their time doing, which are almost always a huge mistake. Write this down. Intake sheet, bad idea. Give them things to think about to affect and manage how they are thinking about what they're going to be thinking about. Good idea. Now they show up for this appointment after you've gone through all of this work. You spent tens of thousands of dollars on your marketing. You spent tens of thousands of dollars on your intake. And now the moment has come where they arrive in the parking lot of your office. And they get out of their car and they're walking towards the office. And your office is to the left. I don't know why it's to the left, but in my mind, it's always to the left. And to the right end of the hall, there's an office of a magician. And the magician has a sign that says, all your problems solved with the tap of my magic wand. Now, we all know that most of our clients are going to probably go to the magician before they come to our office because what they want is the problem solved. They don't really care about hiring a lawyer. No one wakes up in the morning and says, hey, today sounds like a good day to file bankruptcy. Honey, we could go to the beach, or we could go to the park, or else we could go buy a bankruptcy. No one wants to do that. The bankruptcy is a means to their end. No one wakes up excited about filing bankruptcy. No one wakes up excited about hiring a lawyer to handle a divorce. No one wakes up saying, this is going to be a fun day today because I get to hire a litigation counsel. No. They're hiring us, for the most part, as a means to their end. And if they can go to the magician and the magician can wave their magic wand and get them the same end result, 9 clients out of 10, and the one who doesn't is probably not a good client to begin with because usually they're a little crazy, 9 good clients out of 10 are going to prefer to go to the magician. And the question is this. They go to the magician sits them down in his or her chair and says, I will now wave my magic wand and produce the result you want. You simply need to tell me, what do you want? And what the client says they're going to want, that's going to be your magic statement. Get it? Magic, magician, that's the idea. You see, if I describe to people what I actually do, that's like dragging them through the sausage factory. Hey, Arjun, what do you do? Well, you know, we help lawyers to define their financial and their personal and their professional goals and get clear about why those goals matter and put them into objective terms that we can measure and help hold them accountable against and measure to make sure if they're making progress or not making progress. And then what we do is we help them develop a business plan. And the business plan includes blah, 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 blah. No one wants this. You're willing to do it to achieve your goal, but you're not doing it because you want to do it. You're doing it because you have to do it because your goal matters enough to you that you're willing to make the investment. If you could just go to a magician, and if a magician could just wave their magic wand and tap you on the head, an instant presto, your revenues would double. Your profit margins would stay steady at 20 to 25%. You could only work 46 weeks a year. You could take off for 30 consecutive days every year with emergency access only. You could only be averaging about 30 hours a week. And you could have staff who you could trust and depend on working for you who would be profitable for you, financially profitable, personally profitable, professionally profitable. And if you had a marketing system that was feeding your firm a consistent enough steady diet of prospective new clients that you could afford to screen out and decline cases from crazy people without having to have any second doubts or regret taking the business just for the money and then you're paying the price later. If you could make all this magic happen for yourself without having to go through a four-week crash course or boot camp, without having to hire an outside CEO, without having to make a business plan or a marketing plan or a sales strategy or a budget, if you could make all this outcome happen with the tap of my magic wand, that would be better. And I promise each and every one of you that if I had a magic wand, I would just tap you on the head and make it all go away and make everything better for you. And I wouldn't have to be doing this boot camp, and you wouldn't have to be doing this boot camp. Your clients don't want to hire a lawyer. Your clients are willing to hire a lawyer. They're willing to hire a law firm to achieve their outcome. And so with a magic statement is really the question of what are they going to say when the magician says, let me just tap you on the magic head, tap you on the head with my magic wand, and everything will just magically be better. So we are going to get into some interactive stuff. I just have a couple more things. Let's talk about, okay, well, we'll get to the lessons later. All right. So, give me one second here. Let's see. So, surveys. We have looked at your surveys. And don't worry, I'm not going to name any names. I'm just going to let you know we've got people in this group ranging in age from, looks like the youngest is 31, and looks like the oldest is 57. And if you answered a survey and I missed it, I apologize. I just reviewed it very briefly before the call started. We've got people from looks like six different states. We've got firms with everyone from just me by myself, solo, all the way up to one firm that has four employees. It doesn't say what staff. I don't see what it is. We've got people with no kids, the firm that's got the most, the owner apparently has five kids, little kids, big kids, teenagers out of house. We've got everyone. We've got revenues ranging from I'm just getting started all the way up to looks like about a little over $500,000 a year. But that's definitely an outlier. That's not common here. If you have not done your survey yet, it means you have not entered the raffle. And if you've not entered the raffle, I would appreciate an email to rjohn@howtomanage.com. That's my personal email. and I will see it. And I just would like to understand why you're not planning to come to take advantage of the bonus. I'm not going to give you a hard time. I just would like to understand why, because maybe there's some way I can accommodate you. And the reason why I'm making such a big deal of this is really obviously threefold. Obviously, self-interest to get you there because I want you there, and that one's obvious. I don't need to really address that. The maybe not so obvious reason that I'm making such a big deal of this is because the way you do anything is the way you do anything. The way you do anything is the way you do everything. That tends to be a pretty good indicator of how you're running your business. And the standard of care that needs to be applied in the business of running your law firm, it's not the same as okay. I want you there because I want to see how committed you are really to building your business. That's the bottom line. Because if you're really committed to building your business, then there's a lot more I can do to help you. And if you're not that committed to building your business, then I'll help you. I'll deliver. I'll over-deliver on everything I promised to do in this boot camp, and then I'll wish you well. But if you get there, I will do more. And one of the things that we, you know, and obviously one of the reasons I want you there is because I want you to meet. This is a big part of it. Is I want you to meet a couple of hundred lawyers who have their own law firm who are growing, you know, 20, 50, 100% year on year, which is not at all uncommon amongst our membership. And it's not like those stories about I grew my firm by 50% year on year on year is some outlier. You can randomly grab almost any member. You're going to be there with hundreds of lawyers from all over the country, and you're going to hear those stories. And part of the big challenge we run into with helping people grow their law firms is you don't believe that it's possible. And if you don't believe that it's possible, it's really hard to get you to do the things that need to get done to make it happen. So it's really important to me to get you there. Even if you decide not to engage our services after you come there, I just want you to have the opportunity to have once in your life be around a couple of hundred lawyers where this reality that I'm talking about is their reality. Okay, so let's get to it. Your marketing. Second raffle, I said I was going to talk about. I did talk about star 6 to get on the line. I see a couple people are starting to line up for that. And I'm going to give you some coaching. So I'm going to give you some coaching on your magic statement, and we're also going to talk a little bit about your ideal client. And while you are pressing star 6 on your phones right now to line up, I'm going to just talk about why a lot of the marketing you see that doesn't work, in fact, why it does not work for small law firms. In the homework last week, you saw that there are 7 main parts to every successful law firm. Marketing, which leads to sales, which leads to production, or the processes, the systems, the procedures, and all of that for how the work is actually going to get done. That's the production. The production requires people. People need job descriptions and policies and compensation plans and all that. People need things. They need rules. They need intellectual property. They need tools. They need places to work. That's all physical plant. If you manage the marketing properly, you're going to have sales to make. If you handle the sales properly, you're going to have work to produce and deliver to keep the commitments and the promises that your marketing and your sales made to your clients. If you have work to produce, you're probably going to need people to help you produce that work or produce the work for the firm so it doesn't all have to be produced by you. And those people are going to need things to work with. They're going to need tools. They're going to need processes. They're going to need instructions. They're going to need policies and guidelines. If all of this is working properly together, you're going to have revenue coming in and expenses going out, and you should have a profit as the difference. Obviously, you should have more revenue coming in than you have expenses going out, and that's where you make your profit, which is why part number 6 of every successful law firm, which is also part number 6 of every unsuccessful law firm, are the financial controls, the key performance indicators, the measurements that you're going to use, which we are going to be talking about in week 4, or maybe it might be in week 3, but it's coming up soon. We're going to get into what to measure and what to keep track of in your law firm. I just want to give everyone, you know, you can put down your brown paper bags and you stop hyperventilating right now. We're going to get to that later. Today is much simpler than that. It's much more important, but it's much more simple. You know, I do not have an MBA. I do not have a CPA. I do not have a finance degree or a business degree or a math degree or anything like that. I'm really not good at math. You don't need to be good at math. You don't need to, you know, fingers and toes math is all you're going to really need to become very proficient at managing the finances of your law firm. So don't worry about when we're going to get to that. It's not going to be overwhelming or intimidating to you. Okay, on the last call, okay. First, let me just tell you this, and you should definitely take notes. A lot of the marketing we see that does not work and leads to a high cost of acquisition. Okay. First of all, you should all be tracking and paying attention to a very simple key performance indicator for the financial health, and this will be like a crystal ball into the profits of your future, of your firm in the future. This is a very simple number that you don't need to have any math to keep track of. You don't need to be a math whiz to know whether your firm is gaining altitude, which is good, things are going right, or losing altitude, and that's bad. You just track your cost of acquisition. What does it cost to acquire a new client? Forget about what the client is worth. Just what does it cost to acquire a client? There's a million ways that an accountant or a bookkeeper can confuse the hell out of this, but there's one way to make it really simple that you cannot deny. It's imperfect, but it does not need to be perfect to be very, very helpful. Write that down, by the way. Perfection is not necessary for running a multi-million dollar, very successful law firm. In fact, perfection usually gets in the way of growing your law firm. Lots of measurements are instructive, even though they're not exactly accurate. So here you do it. How much did the firm spend on marketing and sales last quarter or last year or last month? And how many new clients did you get? Just that simple. If you spent $1,000, or if you spent $10,000 last quarter on marketing, if you spent $10,000 last quarter on marketing, and that produced 10 new clients last quarter, then your cost of acquiring a client was $1,000. Very simple. You can't argue it. You can't debate it. It is what it is. Now, you're going to say, well, how do we know the marketing we spent last quarter produced those exact clients? Isn't there a better, more accurate, more precise, more defensible, more admissible in evidence kind of way to track which dollar we spent produced which client? And the answer is, of course, yes, there is. There's absolutely a better way to do this. But until you have some staff to help you with this stuff, don't worry about that. Just track your cost of acquisitions. Let it be rough. Do some dead reckoning. We spent $10,000 on marketing last quarter. We got 10 new clients. Our cost of acquisition was $1,000 a client. And obviously, if you see the cost of acquisition going up, that's a bad thing. That means your marketing is becoming less and less efficient. And if you see the cost of acquisitions going down, that's a good thing. That means you're getting more clients per dollar spent. And that is, of course, obviously what we're aiming for. But you've got to keep track of it or you're not going to be able to aim for anything. So once you get your business up to around $500,000 and you start to hire some financial help, that's where members start to bring on a fractional timeshare CFO. Then we can start to slice and dice and get all fancy with the numbers and analyze it more. But don't worry about that. Where most of you are, based on your survey results, just figure what did you spend on marketing last quarter and how many new clients did the firm sign up last quarter, and keep track of your cost of acquisitions and start looking for ways to get it lower. And the reason why a lot of marketing doesn't work is, well, there's five main reasons. Number one, marketing doesn't work because no one is tracking anything. It's pure and simple. You don't track it, it's not going to do very well. Just the fact that you're measuring and tracking the cost of acquisitions, I promise you that alone will make your marketing start to get better as if it just happens. It's just how it happens. You measure it, it's going to get better. The saying is that which gets measured gets better. All right, number two. Reason why law firm marketing does not work. Number two, the person who is directing and making the marketing decisions does not have a clear understanding of who the target client is that we are looking for. The person who is directing and making the marketing decisions does not have a clear understanding of who the target client is that we are looking for. Instead, they do spray and pray marketing. We'll get everyone and anyone that comes to the door is good. You've got to be more precise than that. You've got to be more specific than that. You've got to be able to speak to your target client in language that resonates with them. When you do that, they're going to be much more responsive. When you know who your target client is and you know a little bit about them, like an avatar about them, then you can start to get much smarter, much more intentional about where you are putting your marketing messages out there. And, you know, most of you, based on your survey results at least, you don't have the luxury of being so sloppy. You've got to be more careful with your marketing dollars. So, for example, you would not go out and do a speech to the Girl Scouts if you're doing criminal defense law. I mean, well, you know, there could be a kid in the Girl Scout troop, and, you know, she's going to go home and she's going to say, Mommy, I know you're in trouble with the law, and this nice lawyer came out and gave a really great speech to our Girl Scout troop, and here's his card. I think you should hire him for your – I mean, this is not going to happen. The wrong audience is going to kill your marketing, and we see this happening with lawyers all the time. They put great messages in front of the wrong audience. So you got to know who your audience is. So it doesn't work because it's not measured. It doesn't work because it's the lack of clarity about who the target audience actually is, and more importantly, who the target audience is not. Number three, they put the right message in front of the wrong people because they're using the wrong media. Number four, no follow-up. No follow-up is planned before the marketing begins. Before you spend even your first dollar on marketing, you should already have a plan for how you're going to follow up with people who raise their hand in response to your marketing. Before you spend a dollar on marketing, you should have a plan for how you're going to follow up systematically with people who raise their hand in response to your marketing. What kind of systems are you going to do? What are you going to do to follow up with the leads that your marketing produces? In too many law firms, the cost of acquisition is unnecessarily, irresponsibly, wastefully, irresponsibly high, because the lawyer says, well, I don't have any money to train my staff, but then they literally just burn piles of money on marketing without even having any kind of a plan for how to follow up with people who raise their hand in response to the marketing. All right, reason number five, no plan for the actual sale itself. No plan for the actual sale itself. Lawyers spend all this money on, you know, flattery, ego marketing. You know, they like to see themselves on television. They like to see themselves on billboards. They like to see themselves in ads. They like to see themselves in these fancy videos. But they have no plan for what to do with the prospective client when the prospective client actually shows up at the door. And they just, you know, if it's a good hair day, they close the sale. If it's a bad hair day, they don't close the sale. If cash flow is tight, they close the sale even though they shouldn't. And if cash flow isn't tight, they don't bother to really follow the protocol to close the sale in a systematic way. Someone from your firm needs to be having authentic, meaningful conversations with prospective clients. And if you don't get that right, then the bucket has a big hole in the bottom of it, and pouring more money into getting more and more leads, it's just wasting money. All right. So you were supposed to be pressing *6 to raise your hand to get some coaching on your magic statement. We got a few people who already have your hands up. Maybe the rest of you will join in also. And we're going to go first to 813.
Hello, John.
Hi there.
Hi there, Kristen here. My question was actually specifically about something that we talked a little bit about last week. I think you mentioned the concept of the dragon, and I was just hoping you could kind of talk a little bit more about that. I hadn't heard about it before, and if the dragon that you find to help you, how is that relationship structured? Are they paid? Are they just a friend who maybe thinks well of you and sends work to you? So I was just hoping you could talk more about that.
Right. So dragon is the term we use in how to manage a small law firm, because I watch a lot of cartoons because my wife was a professional animator. And so we like the movie. It's a Disney movie, How to Train Your Dragon. Did you ever see that movie?
I have seen it, a couple of them actually.
Okay. So for everyone who has not seen How to Train Your Dragon, the basic premise of the movie goes like this. Everyone knows the dragons are bad, right? That's what happens in the movie. This is where you're supposed to say yes, exactly.
Oh, yes.
Sorry. Okay. So everyone knows dragons are bad. And everyone knows dragons are evil, and everyone knows dragons are dangerous, and everyone knows dragons are these terrible, horrible, vicious beasts. The only problem with the fact that everyone knows this, and everyone will argue the fact that they know this, and they'll defend the fact that they know it. The only problem with this fact is that no one has ever actually met a dragon. Am I telling the story pretty accurately so far?
That sounds great.
Okay. Until one day this kid meets a dragon. He actually meets a dragon and discovers dragons actually aren't so bad. Dragons are actually pretty cool. In fact, a dragon actually saves his life. And so the whole thing is How to Train Your Dragon is about, it's a lesson for kids to understand that you shouldn't make up your mind about people or a class of people who you don't actually have any personal experience with. And that once you get to know people, you can find out that that everyone can be good. In other words, you shouldn't be a judgmental, prejudiced asshole. That's pretty much the premise of the movie. I got it more or less right?
That's right.
Okay. So the problem with lawyers is that most lawyers will argue all day long about how you have to be a lawyer to sell legal services, and you can't sell legal services if you're not a lawyer. And there are bar rules that prohibit you from selling legal services if you're not a lawyer. And there are bar rules that require you to be a lawyer to sell legal services. And anyone who sells legal services has to be a lawyer. And no one who's not a lawyer can possibly sell legal services. And they say all this stuff, except the problem is they actually have no idea what the hell they're talking about, because they've never actually read the bar rules that say you have to be a lawyer to sell legal services. And I'll give you one guess why they've never read the bar rules that say you have to be a lawyer to sell legal services. What's your guess? Why haven't they read those bar rules?
Not sure. I don't know.
Because they don't exist. That's why.
Oh.
Because there are no bar rules that say you have to be a lawyer to sell legal services. And there are no bar rules that say you cannot sell legal services if you're not a lawyer. And I say this with the confidence of a person who's been talking about this for going on 20 years. And I have studied bar rules in not every state, but most of the states. And I've been in front of tens of thousands of lawyers. And I've had thousands and thousands and thousands of lawyers yell and scream at me and cry and complain and whine and bitch about how unethical this idea is and how unprofessional it is, and they cite all these bar rules, and I've said to them all, I would really appreciate if anyone's aware of any bar rules that say you have to be a lawyer to sell legal services, if anyone's aware of any bar rules that say you can't sell legal services unless you are a lawyer, if anyone's aware of any bar rules that I'm not aware of, I would sincerely appreciate if someone would please, please, please bring that to my attention, because if that's out there, I need to know about it. And then I will shut the fuck up. And if anyone would please do that, I'll give you $1,000 to thank you for bringing this to my attention. And how many thousands of dollars have I given out in all the years I've been doing this that have been asking everyone who tells me you got to be a lawyer to sell legal services? Kristen, you know the answer.
Zero.
None. So either these lawyers are out there and they apparently are broke and desperate and destitute, but they're unwilling to claim their $1,000 bounty from me, or these bar rules don't exist. The fact of the matter is the bar rules, I think, don't exist. If anyone's aware, I'm going to put this out there again, if anyone's aware of any bar rules in any state, in any county, in any city, in any universe that says you have to be a lawyer to sell legal services, or you can't sell legal services unless you're a lawyer, or it materially produces the same outcome, please let me know. Until then, hire non-attorneys to sell legal services for you. By the way, most of the AmLaw 100 law firms, most of the big law firms have non-attorney salespeople selling legal services for the firm. This is not uncommon. The reason why most small law firms don't have non-attorney salespeople selling legal services, there's a few different reasons. Number one, because before you hire someone to sell legal services for your firm, you better yourself know how to sell legal services really well, or else you are basically going to turn yourself into a hostage. You get that point?
I do.
Okay. So, I think that answers part of your question. The answer is, this is a full-time position on your staff. This is a full-time employee whose job it is, whose career is selling legal services for your law firm. It's not a friend who's doing you a favor in their spare time. You don't expect your friend to come in and be your paralegal in their spare time. Hey, I really like you a lot, and I think you're wonderful. I think I'll come work for you for free as an associate when I got nothing else to do. No, that doesn't work. Does that address the first part of your question?
Yeah, it does. I hadn't heard of, you know, the concept before, so.
Well, how many classes did you take in law school on the business of running a law firm?
Zero.
Well, you know, had you taken all those classes that they didn't offer us in law school about the business of running a law firm, one of the classes was all about how, when, why to hire, train, manage, and make a profit with non-attorney salespeople. But I guess you were out playing hooky that day.
Maybe so, but thank you for explaining.
You get my point?
Yes.
All right. Now, your next question is, but how do they sell legal services if they're not a lawyer, right?
Right.
Well, because you don't need to be a lawyer to sell legal services. And I don't mean just because of rules, but I mean because as a practical matter, the sale of legal services, I role-played this last week with someone. I forgot who it was, but I would encourage you to go back and listen to the recording.
No, I remember.
And we went through that. Okay, good. Then I'm not going to do it again. It is, in essence, a very thoughtful, caring, considerate, act of love type of conversation. It's the kind of conversation that a good friend would have with another good friend if they had enough of a position of trust. The conversation is essentially, where are you now in your life or in your situation? Where are you now? And because I'm your friend and I'm thinking this through and I've helped lots and lots and lots of other people think this stuff through before, I have some shortcuts that I can help you think it through better, quicker, easier. And so I'm going to help you think this through in terms of where are you now in terms of your time? Where are you using your time? How are you using your time? How is this situation affecting you in terms of your time? How is this affecting you today in terms of your money? Where are you spending money? Where is your earnings suppressed because of the situation? Where is your money at risk? What do you have to do to get your money? What do you don't get to do to get your money because of the situation? And how is the situation currently today affecting you in terms of your reputation? Could be your reputation with your friends. Could be your reputation in terms of your family. Could be your reputation with your professional colleagues. It could just be your reputation with the person you see in the mirror every morning. Get a good handle on where you are today. Now, based on where you are today, what are your goals? What would you like to achieve? Where would you like to be at, you know, a year from now? Where would you like to be financially? Where would you like to be personally? Where would you like to be professionally? Why does that matter to you? How will you feel if you wake up a year from now and you've got this better life financially, personally, professionally? So far, have I had a conversation that has anything to do with the law? Of course not. Am I having just like a kind of a conversation you probably had with a friend before because you care and you want to help bring some clarity into their life and help them think things through more clearly?
Yeah.
Okay. Why are you in the situation you're in right now? If you don't do anything about the situation you're in right now, where do you think you're going to wind up in the future? In a better situation? In the same situation? Or you think things are likely to get worse? If without making any changes, I think the situation will resolve itself and get better, well, then I don't have to do anything, do I? If I think that the situation will remain the same, and, you know, maybe I'm willing to just keep tolerating the situation, well, then I don't really have to do anything. But if I think the situation is likely to get worse, like most situations do, unless they're addressed, and I don't want to wake up a year from now with regrets, making apologies, making excuses, wishing that I had done something sooner, well, then I better make a decision to do something now. We could be talking about getting onto an exercise regimen. We could be talking about learning to scuba dive. We could talk about whether or not to get married. We could be talking about whether or not to clean out my closet. We could be talking about anything. Isn't that just a conversation that people have?
Yeah.
Well, if you put some structure to this, if you put some organization around this, if you put some systems around this conversation, what you've got is a multi-million dollar sales machine. You look at these multi-million dollar law firms, and I build sales systems for these firms. And I'm telling you, this is what's at the root of it. Behind all the fancy websites and fancy brochures and fancy this and fancy that is essentially this very simple conversation that someone from the firm cares enough about the prospective client to have with the prospective client, which leads to a conclusion: hire the firm or don't hire the firm. You get it?
Yep. Thank you.
All right. So what do you do? What's your magic statement?
Oh, I actually have a couple of them written here, but I will just throughout the one I started with, which was the most simple, and I've been playing with it from there. So I help modern entrepreneurs launch and protect their business.
I help modern entrepreneurs launch and protect their business. Okay. That's actually really good.
Okay.
Launch and protect. Let's start off with modern entrepreneur.
Okay.
What do you mean by modern entrepreneur?
So to date, I've worked with a couple of video game companies, tech companies, and so I was trying to get at modern as opposed to in the past I've worked with, you know, a railroad company, and I guess I wouldn't consider that modern. So I was trying to target that and then also younger demographic. I like to work with younger entrepreneurs and I was trying to evoke that with the word modern.
Okay. So I actually had been to your website before, which, by the way, is pretty awesome. And so I knew what you were getting at. And the point that I wanted to draw out with this question is why modern is actually such a great word to use. Because it does provoke curiosity. Your answers, when you answer these questions, everyone listening to this, your answer should provoke some curiosity. It should instigate a conversation, right? So it's great. So you're going to be out at a networking event, or you're going to be doing a speech, or you're going to be meeting with a prospective new client, or you're going to be meeting with a potential new employee, and you're going to say, before we get started, let me just say my law firm helps modern entrepreneurs, whatever you just said, their business. And then the next logical thing, if you're doing a speech, is to say, now let me tell you what I mean by modern entrepreneurs. And then you're going to proceed to describe the audience to themselves. And they're going to go, holy crap, she nailed it. She's for us. If you're meeting with a potential client, you're going to say, so before we get started, let me just say that our law firm focuses on helping modern entrepreneurs, blah, 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 their business. And the prospective client is going to buy into that, or they're not going to buy into that right from the get-go. And at that point, the sale is basically made. Or not made. You follow what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You're recruiting staff. Because recruiting staff is marketing. It's marketing and sales, and a lot of people don't realize that. Recruiting staff, building your team, it's all about marketing and sales. You know, welcome to this interview process. This law firm is dedicated to helping modern entrepreneurs, blah, 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 blah. And the person who wants to help old fogey, old-fashioned railroad entrepreneurs is going to say, this is not the place for me. And the person who wants to show up with some modern funky haircut with their name shaved in the side of their head and their hair dyed red is going to say, my God, this is the place for me. You follow my point?
Yeah.
And now you know I really did look at your website.
You did.
All right. So that's good. So you said you had more than one.
Yeah, I started making it longer because I wasn't sure, so I wrote down a couple. I help individuals launch or start their business vision and help experienced business owners protect their empire. Too long, but I was trying to get at, starting an entity.
It's not just too long. Well, hold on a second. It's not just too long, but it also is really watering down your message. Right? Because first off, Individuals, I haven't spoken to you very much, but I've looked at your website. I've spoken to you enough to know that I'm guessing that the word individuals doesn't come out of your mouth very often, very naturally.
No.
Then don't use it in your magic statement because it's not magic. Right? It's supposed to be conversational.
Okay. Yep.
And then what was the other one?
I produce results for business owners, individuals, and creatives. Way broad.
And it's not conversational, and it's awful.
Yeah. Okay.
I think the first one's really good. I would go with that, and it will evolve, right? But that first one's a really good place to start. Tell me again what it is.
I help modern entrepreneurs start and protect their business.
I help modern entrepreneurs start and protect their business. Could we say start and grow their business?
Yeah. I
do you think that most of your clients are concerned with – are you think that most of them are concerned with protecting their business or growing their business?
Certainly grow is a better word. I just sometimes help, on the litigation side. So I try to distinguish myself from firms that only do transactional work. And that we can help with dispute resolution. So I wasn't sure how to work that in.
Okay. So then you say, I help modern entrepreneurs start, grow, and protect their business. A little bit long, but, you know, play with it.
Okay.
Okay? So I wanted to let everyone know, because we're going to go through and give everyone a chance to get some feedback here, some coaching around this. At the end of the day, I don't know what I'm talking about with this stuff. I'm just telling you what I think. I mean, what I think is based on 20 years of experience doing this with thousands of lawyers. But at the end of the day, my vote doesn't count. The only vote that counts is the prospective client, not your friends, not your family. Sure as shit, not the struggling lawyers out there who are trying to fit in with everyone else and they're afraid to do anything unique or different. Don't ask them their opinion because their opinion is horrible. The only way you're going to find out if these magic statements work is to actually go out into the real world and have conversations with real prospective clients and real potential referral sources and get their take on it. And the beautiful thing is, when you go out and do that, what almost always happens is someone, I don't know who it's going to be, I don't know when it's going to be, but someone is going to repeat your magic statement back to you. But they're going to put a twist on it, and their little twist is going to make all the difference in the world. And we could sit here focus grouping it for the next 100 years, and we're never going to figure it out until you go out and you test it, and someone will repeat it back to you. And I promise you, that's where you're going to find the magic. Make sense?
Yep.
All right. We're going to see you in Orlando, right?
I'll be there. I had already signed up for the Discovery Day, so.
Awesome. All right. Next up is 954.
Hi.
Hi there.
Hi. I was actually going to ask about the magic statement because I do, like, different areas. So
okay.
When people ask
what
me
do?
What I do, I do business, transactional and litigation, real estate transactional and litigation, and I'm a title agent.
Okay. Let's start by talking about who your clients are. Who are your ideal clients? Because there's two different ways to approach this. One way to approach it is by defining it by the kind of work you do. Another way to approach it is by the kind of clients you work with. So sometimes I might say, I help lawyers start law firms and grow them to $250,000 in revenue in 18 months. Sometimes I might say, I help the owners of entrepreneurial small law firms dominate their local market. In one case, I'm speaking to the work I do. In another case, I'm speaking to the kind of client I work with. What do your clients all tend to have in common?
That's one of my issues is I can't figure out who my ideal clients are.
Okay, let's stop for a second there and figure this out. You want
okay.
to figure it out?
Yes.
Okay. See, when people bring me problems, let's fix the problem. Let's not talk about the problem. Let's just fix the problem. All right? So right now, take out a piece of paper and a pen, a pencil, some sort of writing instrument. So what are the names of your five favorite clients? First names only.
Rafa, Lou, I think those are probably my only two favorite ones. I do work
but
with...
But that's not what I asked you. What are your five favorites? If you had to have five, what would be your five favorite clients?
Realtors aren't considered clients, but they do bring me business.
Yes, they are. Hold on,
okay.
Let's back up for a second. Yes, they are.
Okay.
Let's be really clear and pragmatic about this, right? I understand that pursuant to the bar rules, the person who owns or buying or selling the house is technically the client, but practically speaking, it's the realtor who's your client. Can we just agree with that practical reality?
Yeah.
Great. Who are your five favorite clients or five favorite referral sources that makes it easier to think that way?
So Giles, Jeff, Rafa, Lou, and Paul.
Rafa, Lou, Jeff, Childs, and Paul.
Yes.
Childs is a man or a woman?
Man.
Rafa is a man, correct?
Yes.
Lou is a man?
Yes.
Okay. Well, it could be short for Louise. I don't know.
Yeah, no.
Interesting that all five of your clients have at least one major thing in common.
They're all male.
They're all men. All right. How old is Rafa?
50s.
50s? Lou?
Like 50s.
Lou?
Lou, about the same.
Jeff?
Same. They're all the same.
Okay. Isn't that interesting? We just found out in like 1 minute of analysis that your five favorite clients are all men and they're all in their 50s. Not their 20s, not their 70s, their 50s. All right? Rafa, Lou, Jeff, Childs, and Paul. Rafa has income of around how much would you guesstimate?
Probably about $300,000 to $500,000 on any given year.
Lou?
200.
Jeff?
About 200.
Childs?
Very little right now, but potentially
right now, because Childs hit a rough spot. What would Childs think? So Childs' average income for the last 5 years?
Half a million and more.
A lot like Rafa's.
Yeah.
Paul, average income last 5 years. You don't tell me, I'll tell you. Somewhere around $300,000. All right? So we've just figured out that your favorite kind of clients are men in their 50s with income around $500,000 who all aspire to earn, what's the word we're looking for? Starts with an M?
More.
Ends with an E? More. They're all aspiring to earn more. Am I right? Am I right that Rafa, Lou, Jeff, Childs, and Paul all sit around thinking about how can I earn more? Men in their 50s earning around $300,000 who are interested in learning how to earn more. Wow. We're starting to have an avatar here, aren't we?
Yes. Huh.
Music, entertainment, hobbies, education, ages of kids, relationships with spouses, view on the world, things they're interested in, places they want to go, the kind of stuff you could do for marketing to bring them together. You see where I'm going with this?
Yes.
Rafa, Lou, Jeff, Childs, and Paul are all business owners, realtors, professionals, what?
Yes.
All right. Now, you're not going to necessarily say, what do you do? I help men in their 50s who are earning around $300,000 a year who all want to learn more and are all into basketball. Obviously, that's too specific. But we're beginning to build an avatar. Remember I said in the lesson that a big mistake that law firms make is they don't really know who their client is?
Yes.
You just figured out who your client is.
Thank you.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
So I help real estate professionals. Would they all consider themselves to be real estate professionals?
No. Two are real estate, two are business owners, and one is another attorney.
I help real estate professionals and business owners. What do you help them with?
Make more money.
There you go. I help real estate agents and business professionals make more money. Well, you know, I'm a real estate professional or a business owner, and I heard you say that you help real estate professionals and business owners make more money, and but you didn't specify exactly how you do it in 14 boring-ass paragraphs. Therefore, I'm not going to inquire and ask you more. No, that's never going to happen. That's the hook. That's what's going to catch their attention. Man, you got to meet this lawyer. You go out and you test that magic statement with about a dozen people you don't know. Go to a networking event and just say, what do you do? And people are going to ask you, what do you do? And you can say, I help real estate professionals and business owners make more money. And I promise you, if you're in the right place, they're all going to want to know more. Make sense?
Yes.
If they don't want to know more, look around. You're in the wrong place. Make sense?
It does.
That's how it's done. I'm telling you, guys, not just you, but everyone listening to this, I know this seems really simple. I promise you, these are the kind of little hinges that swing the big doors. These are the little things we do. You tweak this, you get that right, you focus on this other little thing. Building a million-dollar law firm, it's not about some big, giant secret that no one knows about. Building a million-dollar law firm is about doing 100 things that everyone's already heard of before, but they're just not willing to do. Okay, next. John, how are you?
I'm good, John. How are you?
I am doing well. Thank you for asking.
Good. I just wanted to give you my magic statement and get your input. Okay.
That's what we're doing right now. So everyone should be pressing *6 to raise your hand to line up to get some practice and get some help and get some coaching on your magic statement. So everyone press *6 to raise your hand, and John, we'll work with you first.
Sounds good. I help people get on with the rest of their life while getting them through one of the most traumatic events that they will have in their life. That is family law litigation. We try always to get people to a point where they can separate their emotional rage from what the law recognizes as legally sufficient, so I can get them the best result with as little cost and stress as possible while using a multidisciplinary approach to solve their problem.
Okay. Are you a fisherman?
I do a little fishing, yeah, not much.
So when you go fishing, you use a hook, right?
Yeah.
We just want a hook. It's small. It's sharp. It's specific. It's going to stick with them. I help lawyers build million-dollar law firms that give them a great quality of life. Boom, that's what I do. Help lawyers build million-dollar law firms that give them a great quality of life. How I do it, why I do it, all the little nitty-gritty details that are involved in doing it, I don't talk about that. Because if I'm at a cocktail party and someone says, what do you do? And I say, I help lawyers build million-dollar law firms that give them a great life. And they say, oh, that's interesting. Did you see the report on the news about the latest mm-hmm. pollen count? They're not interested, right? I don't need to go on and on and on with this whole big story. On the other hand, if they're a lawyer, even if they already have a multimillion-dollar law firm, and I say I help lawyers build million-dollar law firms in record time that give them a great life, even if they're just a business owner, they're like, oh, my God, that's so interesting. How do you do it? Now the conversation has started. You follow?
Okay. Yeah. No,
there's another part to this. John, there's another part to this that you have to keep in mind.
Yeah.
That person that I met at the cocktail party, that person who was in the audience when I did the speech, that person that I met at the networking event, wherever it was, right, they're going to be out talking to someone one day. A month from now, a year from now, and because I have a marketing system that maintains top-of-mind awareness every month, they're always going to remember who I am. And they're going to be talking to someone one day, and someone's going to say, yeah, you know what, Bob? I'm thinking about leaving my position as an associate at this big law firm and going out and starting my own law firm. And Bob's going to say, I know a guy who helps people start million-dollar law firms and give them a great life. Bam, that's the hook, right? I can't ask Bob to carry my whole life story with him. I can ask him to carry just that one hook. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
Bob is never going to be able to pull off that whole big speech you just gave me. So let's try it again. We can either focus on what you do, or we can focus on who you do it for. Some people focus on why they do it. I mean, there's a lot of different approaches to this. So I don't want to make this too like, you know, rules based. But like, what do you tell me more?
No, I appreciate it. I think the first three or four lines is generally what I say to people when I first introduce myself, and that sparks the conversation. And that is that I help people get through one of the most traumatic events in their life, which is what psychologists say. It's family law, custody, divorce, this sort of, that litigation is second only in its traumatic effect on individuals to death of a close family member. So essentially, I've tried to gear in on those first two lines or so, and I found I think that's working, and it's also part of the philosophy or the story about the firm. Do you think that's too schmaltzy? Should I be focusing more on the client?
What's the benefit of what you do? If I'm a client, if I'm coming to you or I'm going to the magician, right? I go to the magician, and the magician says, what do you want? You say what I want. You say what you want. I'm going to tap you on the head with the magic wand, and instant presto, you're going to get what you want. What's the client going to say to the magician?
Get me out of this situation as quickly as possible with everything I'm allowed to have. And then some.
And by this situation, I need to know what situation you're in. The magician will say, because I don't want to accidentally tap you on the head in the wrong place and get you out of the wrong situation. What are you talking about?
Get me out of this divorce as quickly as possible by getting me as much as you possibly can.
All right. So what if you said, I help people get out of their marriage as quickly as possible, and what's the rest of it you said?
With as little stress and cost as possible, while getting them the greatest amount.
Okay. I help people get out of their divorce. I get people get out of their marriages as quickly as possible with as little stress as humanly possible.
Okay.
Just leave it at that.
Okay.
You don't need to talk about and get you everything you earned, and get you everything you owed, and as little cost as possible, and with a lot of, you don't need. If you say to a person, if you're in a crowded restaurant and you're sitting at a booth and you are talking to someone at your table and you say, I help people get out of their marriages as quickly as possible with as little stress as humanly possible. And that's all you say. And someone is sitting at the table next to you and they're like really worried about getting a divorce and they want to make it as fast as possible and they want to have as little stress as possible. Don't you think there's a chance they're probably going to come over and say, excuse me, I heard you say something. Could you repeat it? Tell me more.
No question. It's much more memorable that way.
That's the point.
Mm-hmm.
Keep it really simple, right?
Yep.
Now,
I got you.
Now, I want to show you another benefit of really zeroing in on this, right? Because a lot of people, they think this is just about marketing, but they don't understand why this is also so important to the quality of the life of the owner of the firm when it comes to client management. So let's say that I'm a prospective client, and I've come into your firm, and you start off the meeting by saying, thanks for coming, blah, blah, blah. Did you get your coffee? All right, so look, before we get started, let me just say what we do around here is we help people get out of their marriages as quickly as possible with as little stress as humanly possible. Before we get any further, is that what you think you want? And what's the prospective client going to say?
Of course that's what I want.
The right prospective client will say, yes, that's what I want. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
The wrong prospective client will say, well, you know, I don't know, because I want to know, am I going to get my pound of flesh? The right client is going to resonate with that really well. They're going to say, yeah, that's exactly what I want. I want to get out of this as quickly as I can with as little stress as I can. And then what you're going to do is basically the whole conversation now becomes, relationship is now governed by this overriding goal. And every time they say, let's fight over the stupid stuff that doesn't freaking matter, you are going to be able to bring them back and say, look, I understand you're really emotional. I understand this is really stressful. I understand this is very unfair. But when you came into my office 6 months ago, we agreed that we were going to get you out of this marriage as quickly as possible with as little stress as possible and as little cost as possible. We did not say we're going to go after a pound of flesh. We said the goal was fast, low stress, low cost. Have your priorities changed? And the client's going to say either, yes, my priorities have changed, in which case maybe they need to return the steak and order the salmon. You get that reference? Return the steak, order the salmon?
Yeah.
Right? Change your order. Right? Okay, you don't want this anymore. You want something else. We'll get you something else. But now we know. Or maybe you say, you know, I think maybe we need to get you to a different law firm because we're not in the justice business. I can refer you to someone else who's in the justice and vindication business. That's not us.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That magic statement is going to be an anchor that grounds everything in that relationship with the client. It's so important that we take the time to get this stuff right, everyone. I'm not just saying this to you, John. I'm saying this to everyone. That's why we spend so much time working on it, because it's going to have so much impact on everything we do in our business. So, anyway, good.
That's
I like
great.
That one.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
That's great.
Hi, Arjun.
I do not know how to pronounce your name.
Kunal.
Okay. Hi, Kunal.
Yes. How are you today?
Good. What do you do, Kunal?
I'm an immigration attorney. I help businesses, families.
The whole idea with this role play is that we're role playing.
Got it. So I assist businesses, families, and individuals navigate the complex U.S. immigration
system.
Okay.
Wait. Kunal.
Yep.
When's the last time you used the word assist in a regular conversation with a normal person?
Probably never.
Yeah. See, the reason why so many people have such a hard time with marketing is because it feels uncomfortable and unnatural. And the reason that it feels uncomfortable and unnatural is because they go around trying to use words like assist and individuals when they don't. Right? So what do you do for fun?
What do I do for fun? Ski.
Yeah, what do you do for fun? I'm sorry, you what?
Skiing.
Snow skiing?
Yeah.
Okay. Have you been to Vail?
Yes.
So, like, do you snow ski or have you tried snowboarding?
I do both.
Which do you like better, snow skiing or snowboarding?
Skiing.
Why do you like skiing better than snowboarding? Snowboarding, you get to go so much faster.
I've done it longer.
So you just, so
less
like,
painful.
What do you, is less painful?
Yeah.
Isn't snowboarding, like, also safer, though?
It can be, but it can also be just as dangerous on your wrists and on your ass.
Oh, I didn't think about that. So what's, like, your favorite thing about snow skiing?
It's liberating to be going that fast and kind of feeling part of the slope.
That's cool. What's your favorite slope? What's your favorite ski runs?
Your
favorite ski run, like your one that stands out most of all, like your favorite place to ski?
Probably out west, yeah, like Steamboat or Breckenridge.
And I'm assuming you have, like, a really cool pair of skis?
Yeah, they're hand-me-downs from my younger brother. Because I chose the path of being a lawyer, and he joined the family business.
So are you going to get your own set of skis next season?
If he decides that he wants to hand me down his newest ones, yeah, probably.
Why don't you just go ahead and get your own set of skis?
No, I'm a simple guy. I don't need new skis, but...
I didn't ask if you need new skis. You want new skis.
Do I want?
Would you like to have new skis?
Sure.
Well, you want them or you don't want them. You're saying it like sure, like it's not really possible.
Yes, yes, I do want them.
Okay, so let's be honest with ourselves and tell me the truth. How many times have you gone online and found the skis you want?
Never.
You don't shop online? You don't look online and, like, drool over the skis you want and, like, revisit them and you haven't got them picked out yet?
No, I don't.
Why not? Don't you want them?
I guess not badly enough.
Okay. So what do you have to do to get those skis?
Go online and drool over them.
Well, no, you don't have to do that. That's just fun. What do you have to do to get those skis, for real? How much are the skis?
Go into a shop, pick them out.
How much are the skis?
They're probably a couple $1,000.
All right, with the bindings and the boots, and you're never going to get out of there without getting a new set of boots and a new set of poles and all the other stuff. So what are you going to be into it when you walk out of that store?
Probably a couple $1,000, $2,000.
Okay. Let's say three. $3,000
okay.
A good budget?
Yeah.
All right. So as a practical matter, where's that $3,000 going to come from?
My pocket.
And how's the $3,000 going to get into your pocket?
Through my practice.
Through your firm?
Through my firm.
Okay. And how's the $3,000 going to get into your pocket from your firm?
I guess
from
one marriage-based case. Yeah, from a client.
From a client. All right.
Yep.
What's your average case or matter worth?
$2,000, $2,500.
Okay. So this math does not hold for everything. Because there's cost of goods sold, there's variable overhead, things like that. But one extra client gets you an extra $3,000.
Right.
And the costs in the firm really don't go up. Am I right?
Correct.
So if we were to draw a line from A alpha to Z Z and skip over all the stuff in between, where's the $3,000 coming from to pay for those skis?
From a client?
From a client.
Yeah.
Now, is the client going to give you this money because their life is worse? Or is the client going to give you this money because it makes their life better?
Giving me the money would ideally make the client's life better.
Well, in what universe does giving you the money not make the client's life better?
If I fuck up the case.
Well, if you fuck up the case, are you going to give them the money back?
Yes.
The answer is yes. Of course you are.
Yep.
Okay. But are you going to fuck up the case? I mean, do you fuck up
no.
a lot of cases? Do you walk
Never.
Around with the fear that, oh, my God, I might fuck up this case?
Not once.
Okay, so then in what universe does the client's life not get better in some way, shape, or form after they give you the – because they gave you the $3,000? See, they're exchanging $3,000 for a better life, right?
Right.
They value the better life more than they value the $3,000, or they wouldn't give you the $3,000. Am I right?
Right.
Okay. So the client has a problem. The client wants to have a better life and solve that problem. The client
right.
has $3,000. The client could use that $3,000 to buy a new set of snow skis.
Right.
The client could use the $3,000 to put a down payment on a car. The client could take the $3,000 and go on vacation. The client could take the $3,000 and divide it up into 10 really nice dinners out with their spouse or significant other. The client could take
right.
the $3,000 and buy, you know, go on a spending spree at the clothing store. But the client has made a decision that what they value more than any of that is a solution to their problem so they can have a better
right.
life. You follow?
Yes.
So the snow skis for you means a better life for the client.
Right.
You telling me that you're not going to get the snow skis because of some story you've got going on in your head between your relationship with your brother and you're the black sheep in the family or some crap like that that we're not going to get into right now, is essentially telling me that you're not willing to help that client have a better life.
Okay.
Because the only thing you have to do to get those snow skis is help one incremental extra person over and above everyone you otherwise would normally help.
Right.
So if you say you're going to help 100 people this year, all you have to do is help 101, and bam, you get the snow skis.
Right.
Now, that last person who you didn't make the extra effort to help, that last person who you shut the door before they got in, that last person who you turned off the marketing before it attracted them, that last person who you closed the office before they could have a sales call, that last person who got left out, how do you think they feel about you not having those snow skis?
They don't give a shit.
Really? You think
about
they would prefer that you have the snow skis and you help them, or you think they would prefer you don't have the snow skis and their life is fucked?
Oh, yeah, they would.
Are you following my way of thinking here?
Yeah.
You see, one of the best things that happened for our members, we've got over 350 law firms that we manage around the country. And most of them, quite candidly, don't interact with me very often.
Right.
They have a outside timeshare CEO. They've got an outside fractional chief operating officer. They got an outside fractional CFO, chief financial officer. They have monthly group call. They have weekly group calls. They, you know, they interact with my team, and they really only
right.
interact with me if they're doing like a special workshop sometimes, or if they're doing a private VIP day, or you know, at the live quarterly meeting they see me on stage.
Right.
You follow?
Yes.
But all of our members got a big bonus last year. I'm sorry, got a big bonus this year. And the big bonus they all got is Arjun decided he wanted to get a new boat. And because Arjun decided he wanted to get a new boat, I'm really serious. Because Arjun decided he wanted to get a new boat and the price tag on the boat was just a hair under $400,000, I had to figure out a way to deliver an extra $1 million of value to our members. So I had to go out and find $1 million worth of problems to solve. I had to go out and find $1 million worth of lives to improve. I had to find $1 million worth of ways to make our members' lives better. Had I not got the boat, I got to tell you candidly, I probably wouldn't have made the extra effort. But because
right.
I wanted the boat, I went the extra mile, I took the extra steps, I made the extra effort, I did the extra thing, and now we got members who are making a lot more money and have a lot better lives because I decided to do some extra programs and some extra workshops and some extra stuff because, you know, I wanted a boat.
Right.
You think they're better off because I wanted a boat?
Yes.
Now, this works if you are a person of integrity, which I assume you are.
Yeah.
If you're a person of integrity who says, I get my money by producing value, by exchanging value for value, then every time you get more money, it's because you're delivering more value. And every time you
right.
deliver more value, the people who are giving you the money are better off.
That's a Make great
sense?
Way to think about it. Yeah, thank you.
It's the only way to think about it because it's reality.
Right.
Every way to think about it that's not consistent with what I just said is really a perversion of reality, because reality is that anytime any two adults have ever made a voluntary exchange in the history of the species, it's because both of those adults made a profit from the exchange. The only way to get
right.
an adult to make an exchange where they don't make a profit is by force, fraud, or trickery. Children, mentally incompetent, we're leaving those people out of it. But anytime an intelligent, capable adult makes a voluntary exchange, they're only doing it because what they're giving up is worth less to them than what they're getting.
Right.
So I have no shame, I have no inhibition, I have no embarrassment in telling you that I wanted a new boat. To get a new boat, I had to figure out a way to give our members more value. I gave them $1 million of value, and I got a $400,000 boat. Everyone's better off. They're better off because they got $1 million worth of value. I'm better off because I got a boat. So, now, by that logic, well, John, if you really were nice, then you would have bought $1 million boat instead of a $400,000 boat, you selfish asshole. Why don't you get trade in the boat and get a new boat every year if you really want to help people? Because I don't really want to help people that much. I want what I want.
Right.
And I help people to get what I want. That's where the part about having integrity comes from. If the way you get what you want in life is by helping other people, then there's really no one who benefits by you denying yourself what you want. Make a list of every single person who you can think of who's better off when you get those snow skis, and you're going to see a long list. Make a list of every single person who's worse off because you got the snow skis. There's no one on the list. There's not
right.
one single person who's worse off because you got the snow skis. Right?
Right.
The client who you made the extra effort for, the client who you went the extra mile for, the client who you picked up the phone, who you wouldn't have otherwise picked up the phone to follow up with the prospective new client, you've got 100 prospective clients who have come in to see you over the last year or so who have a problem. They came in to see you because the problem was bothering them enough, but they walked out with the same problem. They probably still have the problem. Am I right? Might not be 100, but there's a lot of them, right?
Right.
Well, so these people are walking around with the same problem that drove them into your office in the first place. How about if you pick up the phone and call them? Make what we call a gas call. Gas, give a shit. Demonstrate to these people that you give a shit about them by picking up the phone this week and saying, hi, I'm calling because you came into my office 6 months ago with this problem, and you were on my mind. And it just concerns me that you might still have the problem that you came to me with in the first place. When you came to me, you said that you were worried about your safety. You came in, you said you were worried about your children not feeling secure every time an ambulance or a police siren goes by. When you came to me, you said you weren't earning as much money as you thought you could earn if you got your legal status resolved. When you came to me, you said that you're having a lot of physical symptoms from stress because you don't know whether you're going to be able to remain in this country or not. When you came to me, you said you weren't able to pursue your dream to start a business because you couldn't make the investment to start a business until you knew you were going to be able to stay here. These are all the stories your clients are coming in and telling you. Am I right?
Right.
And, you know, it really concerns me because I was just thinking about you, and I care. That's why I do what I do, because I care about people. And I'm concerned that you still have this problem. Have you solved the problem yet? And if you call 50 of them, you know what half of them are going to tell you, right? They still haven't solved the problem. That's what they're going to tell you.
Right.
And has their are they going to say, I still haven't solved the problem, but my problem has gotten better? No, not one of them is going to say their problem got better. They're all going to tell you that their problem got worse. So they had a big enough problem that they went looking for an immigration lawyer.
Right.
They came in to see you, and you failed to help them find a solution to their problem and allow them to walk out the door with the exact same problem that they walked in with. And now, 3 months later, 6 months later, a year later, and because you're such a selfish prick that you want a new pair of snow skis, you fucking asshole, you made the extra initiative to call them and demonstrate that you give a shit. And because you're such a selfish snow ski piece of shit that you want a new pair of snow skis, you realize that they were the same thing. Hello?
Yes.
Hello?
No. Yes, can you hear me?
You realize I'm being facetious, right?
No, of course.
Okay, good. you know, because you're such a selfish jerk that you wanted to have a new pair of snow skis, you took the extra initiative. You went the extra mile to call this person to follow up with them, and now you've been able to help them make a decision. You know what? I want to have a better life. I'm going to bring in the $3,000. I'm going to let you get my immigration thing started, and bam, now you got a new pair of snow skis, and they're on their way to having a better life. I mean, that literally
right.
is how you build a million-dollar business.
Got it. So
mindset
I mean,
really
matters. With regard to the magic statement, so I shouldn't use words that I don't typically use in conversation. And
well, The reason I was starting to talk to you about your hobby and the reason I was starting talking about snow skiing is because I was trying to get into like a conversation, and then I was going to say, hey, you know, you want to get a beer, and hey, you know, what slopes
right,
you
right.
like, and hey, by the way, buddy, what do you do?
Right.
And then all of a sudden you shift out of ski bum, buddy, let's have a beer at the lodge conversation into I help individuals, right? It's not going to work.
Right. Got it. Thank you. I think
so,
the other thing is – sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
So we're at a place now, you know, where obviously we need to work on our marketing. We need to work on our magic statement. But we also – we do bring in quite a bit of business. It's a small team. It's my wife and myself. And we're struggling with hiring the right people, having the right key performance indicators to measure accountability for what work actually happens. Is there a better way that we can kind of – do you have a template that we can use that basically would guide me on developing the key performance indicators?
In the next 2 weeks, we will be talking more about managing staff and key performance indicators. But if you have a specific question, I'm happy to jump ahead a little bit. What's your specific question?
No, that's fine. I think we can stick to the topic. So with regard to the magic statement, we have businesses, families, individuals. We have all types of clientele, and we don't know how to have one magic statement on our webpage just to cater to all of those.
Number one, maybe you need three different websites.
Okay.
Number two, maybe on your website you need a more of a catch-all, and then you need to have three different tracks.
Got it. Okay.
Next
Thank you.
Is you might be able to define it. See, with John, so there's lots of different ways to approach this magic statement thing. One way is by what you do. That's not going to work for you. Another way is by who you do it for. Like the first person who helps modern business owners, we were able to kind of come at it from the perspective of speaking to who the client is. In your case, we might want to come at it from the perspective of why you do what you do. Why do you do immigration? Why did immigration matter to you?
Okay.
Not rhetorical.
Oh, this is not rhetorical. Got it. Well, I guess, you know, I, along with most people, come from an immigrant family.
Well, that's not true.
And, well,
most of the policymakers in this country come from Native Americans.
Oh, of course. That's right.
He says facetiously to illustrate the point. Exactly.
Of course, of course. And, you know, I come from a business family, so I help, you know, businesses that also want to start up and eventually immigrate to the U.S. So, I don't know, I find that to be
My question is, why do you do what you do? Why do you do immigration as opposed to family law, as opposed to criminal defense, as opposed to bankruptcy, which are all, you know, those are all worthwhile things to do. Why is immigration the way you choose to express yourself?
Between me and you, I fell into it. Between me and
the
client.
Yeah, but I don't – hold on a second. Hold on a second. That's bullshit. It may be a fact that you fell into it. But you fell into it and you just stayed there. You didn't fall. If you fell into a hot pit of tar, you wouldn't just be living in a hot pit of tar. You'd get yourself out of it to something else.
Right.
When did you fall into this? Yesterday? No, you fell into this years ago, right?
Yeah, five years ago.
And then you dragged your wife into it.
Yeah.
So there's obviously something about it that's satisfying to you. There's obviously something about it that matters to you, or you wouldn't keep doing it.
Right.
This, by the way, I just fell into it, is the same as the reason that you were giving me why you don't have snow skis, because I'm the black sheep of the family, didn't follow my brother into the family business, and that's why I have to take his hand-me-down. Same dynamic that's going on there. But this is not the time or the place to get into it. Just giving you a heads up.
Got it. Thank you, Arjun.
But why do you do it? So why immigration? Why does immigration matter to you?
I mean, it's a pressing issue in today's political climate, and I want to help
There's
as many people
issues,
as I can to stay with their families.
Why does this matter to you? Saying that you do it because it's a pressing issue in today's political climate is insulting to everyone else who doesn't do immigration. It's like saying we're all a bunch of assholes because we don't do immigration and you do because it's such a pressing issue.
So
why does it matter
to
you?
On the family side, I want to help keep families together. I grew up in an extended family, so I know the value of having family members together. And mm-hmm. on the business side, I want to help people grow so they can support their families.
Why does this really matter to you? Go deeper than this.
I guess I'll have to think about it. I have no idea.
Okay. Well, that's a really fair answer, and I respect that answer. And that's why this is a four-week course and not a four-hour course, because a lot of what we have to do is we do have to think things through, right? Because
right.
How long have you been running your law firm for? How many years?
5 years.
5 years. Imagine if someone had this conversation with you 5 years ago and said, you know what, let's take a week and really think through why we're doing what we're doing. And imagine if 5 years ago you had come to some sort of conclusion about why this really deeply matters to you, and you had been spending the last 5 years expressing that. How much better you'd feel about yourself, how much more comfort, how much more, you know, how much more, everything would be better, right?
Right.
So I'm not saying that to criticize where you were 4 years ago or 5 years ago. I'm saying this to everyone is this is a process, right? No one was born knowing this stuff. We all have to figure it out. It's an evolution. It's a process. And I have to think about that. It's a really good answer, which is much better than most lawyers give, which is I'm not going to think about it.
Right.
So give this some thought. Talk with your wife about it. Why does this really matter to us? You know, if you won the lottery, if you had $100 gazillion in the bank, would you still do what you do? Yes or no?
I probably would be.
Oh, but you're doing it because you just fell into it. You see what I'm trying to say here?
Right.
I mean, do the math here, right? My business grosses over $1 million a month. I personally make over $1 million a year. We only have like 30 people in this course, and everyone's paying $497 or $597 or something like that, dollars, thousand, whatever it is.
Right.
This is not – I don't need to do this for money. I've got 25 people who are as qualified as me to be running this course on my staff. I'm doing this because I really like doing this, because I really like talking to people who are in this very delicate stage of growing their business to help. I like to see sort of like the chick come out of the egg, right? I get to help you guys figure this stuff out at this very fragile stage of growth in your business, where 3 years from now, I'm going to see you. And you're going to say, oh, my God, my business is better. My life is better. My relationships are better. And I'm helping more people, and I'm serving more purpose in my life and the world. And, you know, I've got a $1 million law firm if that's what you aspire to. And I get to see it from the beginning to the end because I do these kinds of workshops sometimes.
Right.
It means something to me.
And we appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, I appreciate it because you guys are trusting me. And you give me the privilege of being able to see this part of your journey. And it's a very mutual respect relationship. So thank you. So you got to think about it. And I got to get going because I got more people with their hands up.
Thanks, Arjun.
You're welcome. I hope everyone got something from that lesson.
Hi, Arjun.
Hello.
I think you've answered a lot of my questions. What I was working primarily on, who was my target client. And right now it looks like males between 30 and 50 who are blue collar and professional.
That's
and
kind
my,
of a wide net.
That's still wide? Okay.
30 to 50 is kind of a wide net, and blue collar and white collar, it's like, well, what else is there? I mean, I guess you could say homeless and unemployed, but I mean, blue collar, white collar, it's good, but I'm telling you, it could be better. What do you do?
Family law.
Okay.
And so,
When you're at a networking event or you're doing a speech or something like that, and someone says, what do? What do you tell them? Please don't say family law.
Well, I could give you the statement that I probably should give you my third iteration, which is I help people fight and protect their children and property.
Okay. Do you prefer working with men? Is that what I'm understanding?
Well, when I looked at my ideal client list, that's 70% were male and 30% were female.
That's not your ideal client list. That's your client list.
When I looked at all, I went through my entire client list and I narrowed down who my favorite clients were, and I narrowed it down to 10 people, and out of that 10 people, 7 were male, 3 were female.
Okay, and of the 10, how many had children?
Eight of them.
Okay. Okay. And how many of them love their children?
All of them.
And how many of them were having a dispute over their children?
All of them. All of the 8.
And what kind of disputes were they having? Was it
custody.
Just about the money?
No, it was, some of it was, let me see. Only one was child support, but most of the time it was, custody was that issue.
Okay. And I'm just telling you what it sounds like to me. I'm not telling you what you should do. It
mm-hmm.
sounds to me like you like helping people with custody issues.
Ah.
It sounds to me like you help like helping people keep their kids in divorce.
Yes. Yeah.
I help people keep their kids in divorce.
Yes. Like helping kids. Got it.
Play around with that. See where that takes you.
Keep. Got it. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right. All right. Rebecca? You might have yourself on mute.
Sorry about that. I was on mute.
All right.
So my question is related to the magic statement. And when you leave some details out for the sake of brevity, I tend to be very verbose when I speak, providing too much information. So I will go ahead and read my statement, and then I'm hoping to get some feedback on that. So I help small business owners with the adulty tasks that lay on their mind so they can rest assured and have positive time with their family and business.
If I was a small business owner, first of all, is there a particular kind of small business owner, a particular industry?
It's more Main Street America. More than anything, I come from a long line of entrepreneurs with sawmills and veterinary clinics and home builders. So really the salt of the earth, those companies that keep our economy chugging.
I help the small business owners who keep our economy trucking.
And I guess that's very straightforward. I switched to my own practice about a year and a half ago after a decade being in big law and being a tax attorney, knowing that I always wanted to help small business owners but needed to pay off some debt. So in my verbosity, I want to say that I do business and tax and estates, and I help small business owners and busy professionals that have kids, and I'm licensed in multiple jurisdictions.
And you can
sure
sew,
how.
And you can juggle, and you can,
right.
you know, dance backwards. But, I mean, like, let's get to what's relevant, right? If your
yeah.
target client went to the magician, and the magician waved his or her magic wand, and they said, just tell me what you want, what would they say?
They say, I want that task list in the back of my head to go away. And that's what I
want
help.
The what? I want the what?
I call it adulty tasks. If I ask what 10 things do you know you have to get done, they're going to say, I need to update my insurance. I need to get my annual corporate minutes.
Back up. I don't know if we have a bad connection or if there's a word you're using that I don't know. They're going to say, I want what?
Adulty tasks.
A-D-U-L-T-I?
With a Y, but yeah.
Is that like an industry term that I'm not aware of?
No.
Or you just made this up?
It's something, I'm not going to say I made it up. It's something that I've worked with in the past. I've done a lot of speaking, talking about.
What is an adulty tax? A-D-U-L-T-Y, like an adult with a Y at the end of it?
Yeah. So there's a phrase amongst millennials, thank you, that's called adulting. Like, what are those things you have to do in life because you're an adult now? So, you know, looking at retirement, looking at insurance, making sure your business compliance
now,
is in order.
I get it.
Gotcha.
As you may gather from the name of my business, How to Manage a Small Law Firm, I like things to be clear and understandable.
Okay.
I don't want you to spend the next 5 years educating people about what the term adulty means. I want you to spend the next 5 years building a business that helps people.
Got it.
And if you're successful in educating everyone in your market about what the word adulty means, it doesn't mean you're going to make one single dollar or help people. So if adulty is not like an industry term that people understand and recognize, and if adulty is not like a local term that everyone in your local market uses, and if what you're saying is you're going to have to go around telling people what the hell adulty means, I don't like it. I hate clever names, clever business names that require explanation, and everyone after they understand it says, oh, that's clever. I get it. The name is supposed to carry its own weight.
Agreed.
Make sense? So
yes.
Now, it's entirely possible that I am just completely out of touch with the world of millennials, and millennials will all get what adulty tax means. But I don't think that's true.
And this was my endeavor.
By the way, how old are you?
I am 37.
So you're not a millennial.
I technically am.
No, you're not. Not even close. Millennials cut off. The oldest millennial alive today is like 29 years old.
Millennials are 1981 to 1997. Sorry, I just did a whole workshop on this with volunteers.
I'm sorry to break it to you, Most people in their 30s don't consider themselves to be millennials, and most people in their 20s don't consider you to be a millennial either, even if that's technically correct.
I'm in the in-between. I'm not a Gen X. I'm not really a millennial.
Okay. Do you help millennials? Is that what you're trying to say? You help millennial business owners?
No. And the reason I threw adulty in there is because I had a very professional phrasing of it that I had on my website and I've had on there for a year. And that's never, I was trying to take to heart the what do you say when you're talking to people. And when I talk to people in an elevator and they say, what do you do? I say, I'm a recovering tax attorney and now help small business owners with all those adulty tasks that are on their to-do list. And they're like, oh, like insurance. I was like, yeah, I don't do the insurance, but I can help you with these other things, or I can find you somebody to help with insurance. Like it, the conversation flows when I'm in the moment.
But I'm trying to tell you that what I think is happening is it's flowing for reasons other than what you think. I think it's flowing because you say I'm a recovering corporate tax attorney. I think it's flowing because you light up, because you're enthusiastic. I think it's flowing because you're infectious with your enthusiasm. I think it's flowing because of a whole bunch of other reasons. And I think it's flowing so well that you don't realize that adulting is actually slowing down the flow.
Gotcha.
Because I think people don't understand what that means. And they might gloss over the fact that they're confused, but it's not adding to the clarity of the conversation.
Can I read you a reworked magic statement?
Yeah, and I just want to say for everyone's benefit, I'm all for having fun in business. I mean, you've seen my marketing. You know that I like to have fun in business. But this is like the kind of thing that clever and cute doesn't really work very well in this area. Pragmatic, clear, and direct works much better. So let's hear the better one, or the revised one.
Okay. This is on the fly while we were chatting. So I help small business owners with the tasks that weigh on their mind so they can rest assured their business and family are protected. We make the overwhelming manageable.
Okay. That's getting worse. It's turning into a paragraph. It's not supposed to be a paragraph. It's supposed to be just a conversation. I love what you said. I'm a recovering tax attorney and I help small business owners. What do you do? I'm a recovering big law corporate tax attorney, and now I help small business owners. I'd like to hear what you help small business owners with, just the benefit, not how you do it, but the benefit of what you deliver. I'm a recovering big law corporate tax attorney, and now I help small business owners because because they're the ones who make our economy work. Bam, now we got to move it. If I'm a small business owner and I hear someone say that they're a recovering big law corporate tax attorney who now helps small business owners because we're the ones who help make the economy work, I'm going to want to know more. I'm going to like you. I'm going to want to get to know more about what you do, and maybe you can do it for me. See how much more just practical this is?
Absolutely, yeah.
Throw the adulting thing in later. Save that for later.
Okay. I'm having, all these light bulbs go off. It looks like a freaking Christmas tree in my head right now. Okay.
Well.
Thank you, Arjun.
It'd be interesting to be inside your head right now. But all right. Next. While we're waiting for the next person, I want to remind everyone, if you have not completed the survey, if you have not entered the raffle, please do so this week. I don't want you to miss out. And if you think this interactive kind of stuff is good, if you're getting some lessons being here, the bonus workshop is going to take it to a whole new level, and you're going to be around hundreds of lawyers who have been through this before. It's just going to be really good for you. So make sure you do the survey and enter the raffle. Next up. Hello?
Sorry. Can you hear me now?
I do.
Hey, how are you doing today?
Good.
A little background on my magic statement. My office is a convenience center. I'm 20 minutes closer to either courthouse right on a county line. I do family law for a military community as well as locals that grew up in the area. I'm right next to Fort Bragg in North Carolina. Long story short, I've gone through it a couple of times, and what I've come up with, just to get your feedback, we help local and military families reach real legal solutions when their family relationships are changing.
I don't understand the "we drill" part. I think that's a little bit adulty. That's a clever play on military drill sergeants or something like that.
I'm not tracking. I'm not sure what – I'm not following you. I didn't hear you.
You say "we drill." I don't get what "drill" means.
No, sir, I did not say we drill. We don't drill.
What'd you say?
We help local and military families reach real legal solutions when their
family. Okay, I'm sorry. I when you said real, I thought you said we drill. I misunderstood. So we help local military families, and what kind of situations do you help them with?
Family law. We help.
Okay, now I get it. Okay, we help local military families reach solutions for their family law problems.
I'll try it one more time. We help local and military families reach real legal solutions when their family relationships are changing.
Okay. So there's nothing that, like, kind of mechanically is wrong with that. And this is why we have to do it out loud and we can't just do it on paper. Because
sure.
There are other people who might be able to articulate that in a way that's clear, and you and I are not two of those people.
Obviously.
Well, you or I. I mean, you and I will both have a hard time articulating that. And I think that the problem is you're trying to stick in local. Just let it be military.
I had the thought. I'm tracking. I hear you.
Right?
Yeah.
Because it's not like someone who's not a military family is going to say, oh, well, since you said military and you didn't say non-military, I guess you can't help me. They're not going to say that. They're not going to think that. Right?
What?
Worst comes to worst, they're going to say, do you have to be in the military for you to help us? At which point you can say, no, we also help non-military families. But if military is really kind of like your target market, then let's really focus on that.
I hear you.
And what's a different word other than either reach or a different word other than real? Because reach real is kind of hard to say.
Well, it's also a play on you can't always get what you want, which is a real part of family law. And that's
I get it,
thing.
But reach real, reach real, reach real, reach real, reach real. It just, I'm getting tongue tied.
Find real.
It doesn't roll off my tongue either. How about with real?
Go ahead.
We help military families with real solutions for their family law problems. This is a performance issue, not a technical issue.
Tracking.
Saying it out loud a bunch of times. You just got to find the words that fit together that roll off your tongue more easily. How about get real?
I love get real. Oh my God. Don't get me excited.
All right. Well, her Christmas lights are going off and you're excited. So this is a good call so far. We help military families get real solutions. For their family law problems. And that turns into a whole let's get real kind of thing. Try it.
I like it.
Test it out. I mean, that's everyone's homework assignment is you got to go test this stuff. All right. Going to go to the next person, and we got to accelerate. Thank you.
Hey, Arjun.
Hi.
All right, so I was working on my magic statement, and my areas of practice are they are symbiotic with each other, but different. I do real estate transactional closings, and then I do estate planning and probate. Most of my clients come from realtors, even in my probates, because they have a client that wants to sell a house. Somebody in their family died, left it to them, so they need to do the probate to be able to close. So my magic statement is I help people acquire and protect their largest asset.
Okay, so your client is really the realtor.
In the real estate, yes. In the probate, I receive a few referrals from the realtors, but there it's mostly individuals. But in the real estate and the transactional side, yes, it is. The bulk of my referrals come from realtors, but not on the probate.
Well, then I would suggest you come up with two magic statements, and I'd like to see you have two different websites.
Okay.
And let's speak powerfully to the realtors on the real estate issues, and let's speak powerfully to the probate people on the probate issues, because the realtors don't give a crap about probate, and the probate clients don't care about real estate, or they don't care about the realtor issues, I should say.
Well, no, the realtor issues, no, but the one common factor, the one common denominator they do have is real estate property.
Well, the other common factor is they're all carbon-based life forms.
True.
I mean, so what? Saying if I'm a realtor, I want to see a website that speaks powerfully to my concerns and my issues. We help realtors close deals that no one else can close. Boom. I'm a realtor, that's what I want, right?
Okay.
And just, you know, when you're out networking and marketing and promoting to realtors, you know you're with realtors. You don't have to talk probate. You can just stick to realtors.
Mm-hmm.
And everywhere else, you can just, you know, take your best guess as to where you think you are and who you think's around you.
Okay. Okay, so then
I'm in law schools. I'm talking about helping people start law firms.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm talking to someone who I find out or I know that I'm around people who are working in a big law firm, I'm talking about starting law firms. If I'm talking to a bunch of people at a general practice solo small law firm section of the Florida bar or a state bar, I'm talking about probably – I'm not talking about starting law firms because they probably wouldn't be in the general practice solo small law firm section of their state bar if they hadn't already started a law firm. Now I'm talking about – probably I'm talking about taking firms from $250,000 to $500,000 in 18 months. Depending on how much they paid to be there, depending on what kind of cars are in the parking lot, depending on what kind of clothes they're wearing, I might say I help people build million-dollar law firms. But if I say I help people build million-dollar law firms in a room full of people whose law firms are under $200,000, they're going to hate me. And sometimes I don't get it right.
Okay. So then for my probate clients, would the I help people protect their largest asset or probate and estate planning?
Well, now probate and estate planning are two completely different audiences.
True.
Probate, the horse is already out of the barn.
Mm-hmm.
So now you've got three different audiences.
Okay.
You follow?
Yep, I'm not there, definitely.
So the challenge you've got is you've made your life three times harder than everyone else's life because you've got three completely different firms you're trying to build. One is a real estate closing firm, and the other is a probate firm, and the other is an estate planning firm.
Mm-hmm.
What I would suggest is pick the one you like the best, and let's build that one. Let's build one of those firms together. So for the rest of this workshop, and if you come to the bonus session, let's just focus on building one of those firms. Which firm would – one's got to go through the gate first. Which one should it be?
Well, my natural instinct is going to be the real estate because it's the one I've been doing for 20 years.
Which do you like the best?
I like all three.
But one's got to go through the gate first. Which is it going to be?
Well, the real estate. It's what I know best.
Great.
It's what I could do with my eyes closed.
Then let's build the real estate firm first. Let's just focus on the real estate firm. when we start talking about marketing, when we're talking about sales, when we talk about the financial controls and the homework this week, all of that, let's just focus on the real estate firm.
Okay.
Because they really are three very different firms.
Yeah.
And it's a mistake to think that they're the same because they're not.
No, they're not the same, but I definitely there is a connection between.
Don't flatter yourself. There's not that much connection.
Okay.
No, but I'm saying this to make you. I'm not saying this to try to make you feel bad. I'm trying to protect you from the next 20 years of your life, trying to make a connection where there really isn't one.
Okay.
I mean, there's all kinds of ways we can, you know. Well, there's a connection because you see, they all deal with the law, and so they're all connected. I mean, the probate client really isn't that interested in estate planning. The estate planning client really doesn't want to hear about probate other than how do I avoid it?
Yeah.
You know, the realtor doesn't really give a shit about either of those two problems. They just want their deal to close.
Okay, there I have to disagree with you because my foot in the door to most realtors to get in front of in their weekly or monthly broker meetings is putting on a presentation to them about how to deal with probate listings. Realtors are clueless on how to deal with probate listings.
But they're only interested in probate listings because they're wanting to close more deals.
Well, yes, absolutely.
It's all under the category of how to close more deals.
Mm-hmm.
I promise you, if your monthly continuing education lunch and learn thing with the realtors was how to close more deals. This month, we're going to talk about how to close more deals with probate. Next month, we're going to talk about how to close more deals with, you know, left-handed people. Next month, we're going to talk about how to close more deals with people standing on their head. They only care about closing more deals.
Yeah.
You see my point?
No, absolutely.
Okay, so focus on real estate just
gotcha.
for right now. Okay, good.
Okay.
All right. Next up, and we got three more to go, and then we're going to talk about the homework. And I'm going to run you through the homework real quick. Hello? Hello? I think you have yourself on mute. 310. If you heard the system say you're now not on mute, I'm talking to you. You may have yourself on mute. Okay, we're going to go to the next person.
Hey, Arjun, this is Mickey.
Mickey, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. And I wanted to say, I know that I owe someone a response on the forum. I've been on vacation. I actually was on vacation last week, and I'm still on vacation. And I took a couple hours off vacation last week to do the first call, and I'm actually taking off vacation to do this call, and then I'm going right back on vacation for the next few days until July 8th. So I will find some time to get back to you, and I apologize for the delay. I don't know. I think it was you that I owed the answer to.
I don't think so. But
apparently not. Okay. Anyway, so Nikki, what do you do?
I help accident victims recover.
Kind of generic, kind of cliche. What kind of accident victims do you help recover? Why do you really give a crap about doing this? Why does this matter to you?
Well, it matters to me because I was an accident victim. And so I was a victim of a personal injury, and
what happened?
I got assaulted when I was a kid. I got beat up in a bar.
And so now you help people who get beat up in bars?
No, mainly I help auto accident victims because I had a job working for insurance companies defending them and. So that's how I learned that practice. But in my mind,
help me draw the connection between got beat up at a bar when I was a kid to now I help people who are involved in automobile accidents, because I know there's a connection there because I can sense it in your voice. I just don't see it.
Yeah, well, so the victim of someone's negligence, you know, ends up getting hurt, and they're hurt, and they have to be able to seek medical treatment. They have to get it paid for, and then they have to
fight
against the insurance companies in order to get that paid for.
A couple things. The person who beat you up in the bar didn't beat you up by negligence. They beat you up on purpose.
No, but the bar, who's actually the people that are going to pay for it, they were negligent in security, negligent in letting a little kid into the bar, negligent, you know, in not having certain things, protections and, you know, bathrooms. So, you know, there's people who are negligent, and then there's people who have money that can pay for it. So
I got it. I'm just saying you've got this compelling story, right? But it's kind of like buried, and you're not making use of it.
Okay.
So talk to me more about the negligence of the bar owner. Talk to me more about the negligence of the driver of the car. Because the insurance company wasn't negligent, right? The insurance company who you're suing is not negligent. So the bar owner was negligent. The guy that beat you up in the bar wasn't negligent. He was intentional. You sued the guy who was negligent because of the act of the person who was not negligent. And then now you're turning it inside out and backwards and upside down, and now we're suing the company that's not negligent, which is the insurance company, because of the acts of the negligent person, which is the driver. And
then we can't use negligent in conversation with the, you know, average guy at the bar either, so try to avoid all that.
I'm just saying there's a logical puzzle here that the pieces need to be put together, and they're not together in the way you're presenting it to me right now.
Okay.
So let's work on it.
Okay.
How do your clients feel?
Frustrated, angry, hurt.
They feel hurt?
Yeah, a lot of them feel hurt. They feel
like I'm your best friend and I forgot your birthday and now your feelings are hurt?
No, hurt like like a lot of them feel like they're a victim, like they were doing everything that they were supposed to do and somebody else didn't do what they were supposed to do, and because of that, they're put in this situation. And then they're, you know, sometimes they're hurt because they've, you know, paid an insurance company money for months on months, and now they feel like they're being interrogated by their own insurance company.
Right. I get all of that, but I just think that hurt is kind of a non-starter.
Okay.
Because I don't – and look, I could be wrong. I don't know who your clients are. But I've worked with a lot of personal injury lawyers over the years, and by extension, lots and lots and lots of their clients. And I don't find that most clients feel hurt. Hurt is typically a feeling reserved for a personal relationship. I'm hurt because you forgot my birthday. I'm hurt because you said some mean things to me and I thought we were friends. I'm hurt because, you get what I'm saying?
Sure.
You know, an insurance company doesn't pay me. I'm not hurt. I'm pissed off.
Okay.
Now, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you attract a particular subset of the market who take it personally when an insurance company doesn't pay them and their feelings are hurt. But I don't think that's true.
No, I mean, I'd go with, you know, pissed off. That's fine.
So I help people. I mean, how about if you say something like, I help people who are pissed off and angry after an automobile accident.
Okay.
I help people who are pissed off and angry after they get into an automobile accident that's not their fault. That's me. I was in an automobile accident. It wasn't my fault. And now I'm pissed off and I'm angry. How can you help me?
Sure.
Let's take a bat and go over to that guy's house and smash in his windows. Sounds like a plan.
Sign me up.
And on the other hand, we could also just sue his insurance company and get you money.
Yeah.
Could we do that and take the bat to his house? Because, you know, they both sound good to me. You follow where I'm coming from?
Yeah, I get it. So kind of, you know, focus in on my, like you talked about today, and my ideal client, or the generalities of the ideal client and their characteristics, and specific to them have my magic state.
Yeah, so there's lots of ways to come at this, right? Like, some people come at this from a, like, they're on a mission to change the world. Some people come at it from, you know, the specific kind of work they do. It's so specific. Some people come at it from the kind of clients they help.
Right.
Some people come at it, you know, in your case. And I fully get that there's another story there that we haven't explored that's probably really powerful around the kid who got beat up in a bar. But I just think for right now, let's get something that works.
Yeah.
Before we try to unpack that.
So help people who are... No, totally get it. All right, that works for me.
I help people who are pissed off and angry after they get into a car wreck that wasn't their fault.
I will give it a shot.
And then what you can say is, look, I know what it feels like to be pissed off and angry when something happens that's not your fault. When I was 19 years old, I was in a bar. I was minding my own business. I wasn't bothering anyone. And a couple of guys came along and beat me up. And the bar owner didn't do anything to protect me. And the bar owner didn't do anything to take responsibility. And the bar owner didn't do anything. And I was pissed off and angry. And I know what it feels like to feel helpless and powerless. And I know what it feels like when someone, you know, doesn't step up and do the right thing. The right thing for the insurance company to do, I mean, they can't prevent the automobile accident. But the right thing to do would be not to make bad things worse by jerking you around over the payments. See how this all kind of flows together when you get it working?
Yeah, no, that sounds great.
Okay, play with it.
All right. Thank you.
Last and not least, you're welcome. Last and not least, and then I'm going to run you through the homework for next week, is 978.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey, Rajan, how are you?
Good. What do you do?
I help aspiring entrepreneurs take their dream business concept and turn it into a real company.
I like the narrowness of aspiring entrepreneurs, but I feel like it's maybe a little bit too narrow.
Okay.
Because,
I agree, because,
like,
then it's just people that are just coming out of, you know, you're really limiting yourself to, like, the startup.
Well, see, when I hear aspiring entrepreneur, and maybe this is just me, because maybe this is, you know, I'm probably jaded. But when I hear aspiring entrepreneur, what I hear is you help kooks and dreamers who have no money and probably aren't going to do shit with their idea. Because you're either an entrepreneur or you're not an entrepreneur. People who go around saying, I'm an aspiring entrepreneur, are really saying, I don't have the guts to jump out and make it happen. I suspect I'm not the only entrepreneur who feels this way about people who refer to themselves as aspiring entrepreneurs.
Yeah, they're the ones just with ideas, no action.
They're the ones who give people like me a bad name. People like us, you too, right? You're not an aspiring entrepreneur. You are an entrepreneur.
Exactly.
You started your business. You're not sitting around at a big firm talking about when you start your own law firm. You started your own law firm. How do you feel about all those lawyers who are sitting around in those big firms with those cushy jobs and, you know, they're talking about, when I start my own law firm, it's going to be so great. I'm going to do things differently. I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. Fuck you. You haven't done shit.
Exactly.
So
yeah, I guess my angle with that was I was trying to hit at like a value, you know what I mean? Like I was trying to hit at like some type of emotional value driven kind of like qualifier to the entrepreneur.
You did hit an emotional chord. I just don't think you hit the one you were looking for. You got
exactly. True.
Right?
Yep.
What kind of entrepreneurs do you like to work with?
My ideal would be, for example, I have these guys in New York. They're in their mid-20s. They came up with an app that kind of piggybacks off of a major platform app. And they complement each other. One's really tech, one's really business savvy. They're motivated, they're open, their attitude is great, and it's just fun to work with them. And it just happens to be extremely successful, I think, you know, because of those traits as well.
Okay. So you could say, I'm not saying you should, but this is a pretty edgy thing that I'm about to say. Okay. I help highly motivated entrepreneurs build real businesses.
I love that.
What was the last part that you helped them do? You helped them do what?
The last thing that I helped them do?
You said I help something. You said originally I help aspiring entrepreneurs build something.
Yeah, take their dream business concept, but again, that's the piggyback, not the aspiring. Take their dream business concept and turn it into a real company.
Real company, that was the part. I help serious entrepreneurs take their concept and turn it into a real company. And then that lets you pivot off of serious entrepreneurs to create an us versus them. Us who are serious versus them who talk a lot of shit and never get off the pot.
Yeah, it's a much better message.
Right? And then you can have a whole story about serious entrepreneurs versus, you know, those dreamers who never actually have the courage to actually start a business. And then you could say, look, you're a serious entrepreneur. If you left your job to pursue your dream, you're a serious entrepreneur. If you've got your grandma's savings, you know, as friends and family funding, you're a serious entrepreneur. If you blah, 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 if you've maxed out 14 different credit cards to find the money, you're a serious entrepreneur. Serious entrepreneurs need to do some serious things to protect their dream. And it just kind of rolls from there.
Yep, I like that.
A serious entrepreneur could be your thing that you hang it all on.
Yeah, well, they're serious, they're disciplined, you know, they're diligent, they're organized.
Yeah,
those really are the ones you prefer to work with.
Yeah, I would stay away from disciplined and organized because I consider myself to be a very serious entrepreneur. But I don't consider myself to be disciplined or organized.
Okay.
I surround myself with disciplined, organized people.
Yep, that's true.
But I the point I'm trying to make is serious means it's an attitude. Disciplined and organized are qualities. Those are qualities I don't personally have. But I do have the attitude of being very serious. Make sense?
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. Thank you very much.
All right. So we've got through everyone on your magic statement. I'm just going to run you all through the homework that you should have received in your email week two of the 4-week intensive business plan boot camp. And basically what we're going to do is you're going to figure out the whole goal of this is to figure out how many appointments marketing must book each month. If you jump to page two of the workbook, the final conclusion of this is, in this case, the example is 79 appointments that marketing must book each month. So basically, you start off with if you determine that you want to have, let's say, a $1.3 million firm, whatever gross revenue you want. And to get to that gross revenue number on page one, there's actually a formula missing. What you need to do there, I apologize, there's a number missing on the top of page one. On the top of page one on the right, where you see $1.3 million, how much gross revenue you need is dictated by how much net income you need to live the way you want. So you start off with how much net income you need to live the way you want. For purposes of this formula, multiply that number by 3 to come up with your gross revenue. So how much net income you need to live the way you want to live, total owner benefit to live the way you want to live, multiply that by 3 to get to your gross income requirement, and that'll get you sort of kind of close. So if I said that I need $200,000 to live the way I want to live, I'd multiply $200,000 by 3 to get $600,000, and $600,000 would be the gross revenue number that I would plug into the formula that is on the top of page one in this week's workbook. And I apologize, that first formula is missing. That will be corrected in the future. Raise your hand, *6 to raise your hand if you have any questions about what I'm talking about here, because this formula is going to be really important to build your marketing plan around. So in the case of the, I'll use the exact numbers. Okay, I see someone's got their hand up. John?
Yeah, Arjun, my problem is in my phase of the industry, my cases usually last 2 to 3 years. And sometimes okay. I get a large lump sum payment after a piece of property is sold. So my cases per year don't reflect the amount of revenue per case that I might need or might get. So, for example, this year I've gotten 22 cases. You know,
right? I understand what you're describing, and what you're describing is a working capital problem, which is different from a marketing problem. So if we took your cases, if we took your same scenario, so how much does it cost to live the way you want to live each year?
Okay, I understand what you're saying. Mm-hmm.
So what's the number?
Say 100,000. I still have to figure it out.
Okay, so 100,000. So let's say if the firm were to gross $300,000 a year, and if it gave you 33% total owner benefits, that's going to be your salary, your distributions, all the stuff you run through the business, blah, 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 blah. Let's say a $300,000 firm kicks out $100,000 to you at the end, right? $100,000, so we would need a $300,000 firm. So $300,000 divided by what's the average value per case?
That's what's difficult to figure out. Okay.
You're doing what kind of law?
Family law and divorce. So, for example,
I got it. Family law, divorce. I got it. It's not difficult to figure out. You just haven't looked at the numbers yet.
Okay.
So, if you look at a whole bunch of cases that you've closed, if we were to do a survey and just do an analysis and say, I'm going to take a random sampling of 20 different cases that have closed. At the end of that case, what was it worth?
Okay.
Right? And I understand that it's not coming in steady month by month by month by month by month, but the case is going to be worth whatever the case was worth.
Okay. So I got you. So this number is more from a marketing perspective. I need not be 100% on target in order to get the kind, look for the kind of, or set the goals I need to set. Is that what you're saying?
Right. So.
Okay.
So if you need $100,000 a year to live the way you want to live, to use as the example, and you figure the firm's going to run a third, so that means you need a $300,000 $300,000 a year of gross revenue, and if the average case is going to be worth $10,000, that means you need 30 cases a year.
Okay.
If you got 30 cases a year at $10,000 a case, and you did that for 5 years in a row, you'd have a blended average of $300,000 a year. You'd have a blended average of $100,000 a year.
Make Very sense? Good. I'll do it. I'll look at it that
now,
way. I'll do more averaging.
Right. Now the issue of, yeah, but some cases pay me at the beginning of the year, and some cases pay me at the end of the year, and some cases don't pay me until every other year. Like, for example, a lot of personal injury or contingency lawyers, that becomes a conversation about working capital.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And you need working capital to cushion the ups and downs. But start off with a marketing question.
Will do. Thank you.
Okay.
Very good.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
All right. So the formula, everyone. Okay. Someone else has a question. Hello?
Hi, Arjun. Just a quick question. I'm trying to figure out or find where the homework is.
It should have been emailed to you. If not, it will be emailed to you right after this call.
I got one email from you with two different attachments, the policies and procedures and the customer relationship management booklet. None of those, correct?
Correct. What you're looking for is the 4-week intensive business plan boot camp week 2.
No, I just have week 1, so I should be getting that via email later on today.
Yeah, check your junk mail. It might have gotten sent to your junk mail. Otherwise, send me an email if you don't find it, and I'll make sure it gets sent to you.
Okay, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, so the basic idea, don't even worry about looking at the worksheet. Just follow the basic idea here. The basic idea is you start off with how much net income you need to live the way you want to live, because that's really driving everything. Multiply that by 3 or multiply that by 4 if you want to be more conservative. You multiply it by 3, it means your firm will be operating on a 33% profit. If you multiply it by 4, it means your firm will be operating on only a 25% profit. If you want to be even more conservative, you say you multiply it by 5 and say your firm will be operating on only a 20% profit. So the higher the number, the more conservative you're going to be. Just play around with it and you'll see the relationships. But 3, 4, or 5 is probably the right number for most of you to start with. And I emphasize start with, because we're just trying to get you into the ballpark here. You'll refine your numbers later. We just want to have this as a first draft. So let's say you need to make $100,000 to live the way you want to live, and you multiply it by 3. That means your gross revenue needs to be $300,000. If you multiply it by 4, obviously it means your gross revenue needs to be $400,000. If you multiply it by 5, obviously that means your gross revenue needs to be $500,000. Meaning the lower your profit margin, the more you need to gross to end up with the same $100,000. Then you divide that gross revenue number by whatever your average case value is. Doesn't matter if you get paid flat fee. Doesn't matter if you get paid contingency. Doesn't matter if you get paid hourly. It doesn't matter if it comes in dribs and drabs. When the case is done and you close the file, what was the case worth to the firm on average? Whatever that number is, you divide that into the gross revenue that is required. And that tells you how many cases you need to be opening and how many cases you need to be closing every year. Now you know how many cases you need to be opening, how many cases you need to be closing every year, and you divide that by 12 to tell you how many cases you need to be opening and closing every month. Okay, that one was simple. Now you take how many cases you need to be opening and how many cases you need to be closing every month, and you divide that by your sales conversion rate. So let's say you need to be opening 10 cases every month, and let's say you convert 100% of the people who come to see you, which is very, very, very unrealistic. But let's just say it is. If you close 100%, if you need 10 per month and you close 100%, obviously marketing only has to give you 10 cases. That's simple. But what if you don't close 100%? What if you only close 1 out of 2? Well, then if you need 10 and you close 50%, you need to meet with 20 prospective new clients. Marketing has to give you 20 prospective new clients. What if you convert 1 out of 3? If you close 1 out of 3 and you meet and you need 10 per month, then you need to meet with, marketing has to deliver 30. Now you have a real hard target number for how much business, how much marketing has to deliver. Okay, that takes you through page 4. Page 5, getting to know your clients. You heard us do this exercise already with a couple of different people. The whole discussion about Rafa, Lou, Jeff, Childs, and Paul, where we figured out that they're all in their 50s, they all earn around $300,000 a year, they're all men, and they all have a big goal of making more money, and they're all realtors and business owners. That's really what the exercise on page 5 is all about. Who are your best clients? Behaviors of your best clients. What do you want them to do? How do you want them to behave? What are the attributes? What makes them your best clients? They're my best clients because they're cooperative. They're my best clients because they're fun. They're my best clients because they're understanding when we make mistakes. They're my best clients because they're organized. They're my best clients because they're smart. They're my best clients because they value themselves. I just described, by the way, to you a lot of my characteristics for what makes someone a really great client for me, for How to Manage a Small Law Firm. What makes someone a really great client for How to Manage a Small Law Firm is number one, above and beyond anything else, to be a really great client for How to Manage a Small Law Firm, to be an A-plus number one member for How to Manage a Small Law Firm, is you value yourself. You value yourself, you value your future, you're willing to make an investment in yourself, you believe that an investment in yourself is the best investment you can make. Number two, you're smart. I don't like working with stupid people. We don't work well with stupid people. Number three, you have a lot of self-esteem. People who don't have a lot of self-esteem don't work well with me and my style. My style works well with people who have a lot of self-esteem because I challenge you, I push you, I'm gonna be rough with you sometimes when I need to be rough with you to get through a tough spot, and you gotta have enough self-esteem that you understand that, you know, it's not personal. To be a really great client for How to Manage a Small Law Firm, you have to have a bigger vision and a bigger purpose for your business and for your life. People who have no vision, no purpose, they're just trying to get by, they're just trying to get through the day, they're not going to be willing to make the kind of long-term commitment that is needed to build a really successful business. Anyway, these are examples of what an A client is for me. You come up with your own list. Now, remove a couple of positive behaviors from an A client to downgrade them to a B client. Remove a few positive behaviors from a B client, and now they become a C client. Remove a few positive behaviors from a C client, and now they become a D client, and then so on and so forth. Or the other way to do this is to start on page 7 with an F client and work your way up to an A client. So an F client for how to manage a small law firm is, number one, it's an asshole. Someone who's an asshole is just, I don't care how much money they pay. I don't care how much they want me to help them. I don't care how much I can help them. If they're going to be an asshole about it, I don't want to work with them. Period. End of story. An F client is someone who has an attitude of entitlement. People who feel entitled, people who feel like they're owed something from the world, that's an F client for me. I don't want to work with people like that. Can't stand them. Don't want to work with people like that. Number three, people who are intellectually selfish, people who are takers and not givers, people who are jealous, people who are territorial, F client for me. Don't want to work with them. Don't want to be in the same room with them. Don't want to expose them to any of my members. Everyone wants to stay away from people like that. That's an F client. So one way is to start off with your definition of an F client and then build them up to an A client. The other is to start off with your definition of an A client and then demote them down to an F client. It's chocolate or vanilla. You're going to get there either. It doesn't matter which way you started. Try it both ways if you like. But the point of this is to come out of this with an objective definition of an A through F client. When we are on the phone next week, I'm going to be asking each of you about how much net income does it take to live the way you want to live. I'm going to be asking you what is your average case value. I'm going to be asking you what is your conversion rate on prospective clients into paying clients. And I'm going to be asking you how many prospective new clients marketing has to deliver each year, each quarter, each month, maybe even each week. I'm also going to be asking you about your definition of an A client and your definition of an F client. Your homework. Your other homework is to, on page 11, is to make your gas calls. You heard me talk about that on today's call. There are scripts for your gas calls on page 14 of your homework. Don't make this complicated. Don't make this more painful than it needs to be. Just grab a list of 10, 20, 30 of your clients, of prospective clients who came in with a problem and did not hire your firm. Pick up the phone and call them and let them know that you give a shit about them. Let them know you care about them as a human being. What's going on in that person's life? What's going on in that person's business? Have they fixed their problem already on their own? If so, great, good news. I'm glad to hear it. I was concerned about you. I feel better now knowing that you solved your problem. Good luck. Let me know if you have any questions. Otherwise, it sounds like you're in good hands. Goodbye. More often than not, you're going to find out that they have not solved their problem, and now you need to help them. If you don't have enough, or if you run through all of your unconverted clients, then call some of your former clients. That's right. Call former clients. You earn the right to call them a client. The bar allows you to pick up the phone and essentially cold call these people, even if it's been months or years since you closed their case. You still can call them. You pick up the phone and you say, "Hi, Bob. Hi, Mary. This is R. John Robbins. Don't worry. There's no problem. Don't worry. I'm not calling you with a problem. I'm just calling because I want to check in on you. How's it going? What's new in your life? What's changed in your life since we closed your case? What are your hopes and dreams and goals and plans for the next 12 months? I just want to know what your plans are because I care about you and I like to keep up with my clients. By the way, is there anyone that I could refer to you? Oh, you need a realtor. Oh, you need an insurance agent. Oh, you need a speech therapist. Oh, you need someone to train your dog to stop shitting on the rug. Whatever it is, be a resource by being interested enough in what's going on in that person's life. Give a shit about these people. It will pay off for you handsomely. Plus, it's the right thing to do. Study the lesson around accounts receivables and pick up the phone and get your money. That's all I'm going to say about that. Pick up the phone and get your money. We'll talk more about that next week. So in summary, next week we're going to talk about your financial goals, and how those financial goals convert into a marketing plan. We're going to talk about your definition of an A client through an F client, and I'm going to expect you to articulate that in terms that you could actually explain to a marketing consultant, that you could explain to a member of your staff, that you could explain to a non-attorney salesperson, that you could explain to the prospective clients themselves. Because probably when I was describing my definition of an A client through an F client, probably some of you were really getting excited when you heard me describing my idea of an A client because you thought, wow, that's like me. And probably when I was describing my definition of an F client, probably some of you were getting really excited because you're like, good, because I don't want to be around people like that either. And I'm glad he thinks the same way I do. It's really important if you're ever going to build a team, if you're ever going to have a staff, you've got to have these things defined so that everyone's working off of the same page. All right, and next week, the other thing that we're going to do is we're going to drill into your gas call strategies, and I'm going to want to hear about what's worked, and I want to hear about what didn't work, and I will give a $100 cash prize to anyone who has anyone. If you call former clients, this is a very specific bounty challenge. We call it the fuck off challenge. If you call former clients and you say, I'm calling because I care and I want to know what's going on in your life, and you are genuine and sincere in what's going on in your life and what are your plans for the future, if a former client tells you fuck off or words to that effect, I will give you $100 cash. There's a limit. One per customer, but I will. And the reason why I do this is to challenge you, because I'm telling you, they're not going to do that. Instead, what happens when we give people this assignment, when they go and they call their former clients, is they say, oh, my God, they were so appreciative. They were so surprised, and they were so happy to hear from me. And the one that I was really most afraid to call because I was most uncomfortable about the way their case was resolved, that person was the most gracious and the most appreciative. You very, very, very rarely get pissed off former clients when you call them. Call them. Just have the courage to pick up the phone and call them. Make your gas calls. I'm going to be asking you about those next week. All right. So that's it. We are wrapping up, and I'm going to take everyone off of mute so we can all say goodbye. And that's it. Have a great week, everyone.
Thanks, John.
Thank you.
Hello. Thank you.
Don't forget to do your surveys. Bye-bye.